Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Well, hopefully my voice will finally clear up. I won't be occasionally coughing and other nasty noises into the microphone here. That's what I'm hoping. So we shall see. So whatever it is, this has been lingering on for a while. So as much as my immune system seems to be working rather well, normally, this has been lingering for way too long. All right. So it looks like, as far as I know, we should have our folks, Cindy Ann Scott and Matt Scott, our husband and wife drag racing team, joining us here hopefully anytime. So we should get in touch with them. They've been busy. They've had life complications stuff, and they haven't been able to join us, which is really too bad because we only had one, I think it was maybe two conversations. The first one lasted almost 2 hours. We had so much fun. We're talking drag racing. And you think to yourself, well, how can you talk drag racing for 2 hours? Well, of course, we get into, life, speed, the fumes, the smell of freedom as that gasoline engine cranks up, and it just wouldn't be the same with an electric car. I think we talked about electric cars too. Anyway, so we had a great chat, and like I said, I'm hoping to get them back as soon as possible this morning. We'll see what's happening. I got the messages out, and we shall see. If not, though, I got a bunch of other stuff to talk about. So let's kind of launch into my title of the show today. I can't drive by the five. In other words, $5 a gallon. This is insane. And the saddest part is there's no reason for it. And it all goes back to the same problem. The government chose the government. It all goes back to the original problem that Trump won the election. And the deep state said, no, we don't care. We don't care what the people voted for. We don't care what the Trump electors that come from the states. We don't care about any of that stuff. We want business as usual. We want our government privilege. We want to live exactly as we want to live. And we want to do things our way. We're the boss. We're the government. Who the hell are you? And that's basically the attitude in D.C. I know. I've been there. And so with this incredibly dangerous, stupid, unconstitutional, overbearing, overpowerful attitude, they decided that they knew best and that they wanted to make Brandon the president. And with obviously disastrous results, but they don't care because they've got their privilege. They've got their government privilege. They've got their perks and their benefits. And, the Republicans get to be losers, which is where they're the most comfortable. And Democrats get to, pretty much run everything, which is where they're most comfortable, unfortunately. And in business as usual means that the United States is in decline, that our foreign policy sucks, that the economy is in the tank, the dollar is dropping, expenses are getting ridiculous, the national debt is growing to treasonous levels. They are committing economic suicide for us. It's like murder of the economy. And so all these things are going on. Our oil is sitting in the ground rather than, being used to drive our economy and raise our standard of living and give us cheap and available energy so that we can carry on normal business. The truckers can drive and the food can get to the stores and all the things, that the jets can fly, the cars can go, the ships can go, the trains can go, everything can go the way it's supposed to go with oil, which is a wonderful product, which is down there in the earth, as we proved in the last couple of days, that the earth makes oil. It just does. Makes it in the mantle. The mantle is the warm stuff below the crust, okay? So what happens in the mantle, a lot of things apparently happen in the mantle. I guess that's where most of the elements of the periodic table, the 93 elements of the periodic table that make up the stuff of earth, make up the stuff of what we are, everything from hydrogen to uranium, that stuff is made, for the most part, in the mantle, and they take hydrocarbons and turn it into oil, and that's what the earth does. It takes hydrogen, which is down there, and carbon, which is down there, because we are a carbon-based life form. Carbon's everywhere. So you combine carbon and hydrogen under heat, and they form what's called a hydrocarbon, which I guess is similar to a carbohydrate, except the carbohydrates have oxygen. That's the difference. They oxygenate, which means they burn. And so it takes oxygen to burn that stuff. Well, down there in down there in the mantle, there is no oxygen. But apparently there's hydrogen, and there's carbon, and they form carbohydrates, which eventually, form the polymerase process, which ends up being oil. And so oil is made in the earth, and it comes up and works its way up, and we drill for it. And apparently we weren't drilling deep enough because there's all this oil down there that is coming back into where they think the dinosaurs, lived and made oil. I don't believe that for a second. I never have. It doesn't make any sense to me. Ever since I saw my first fossil, these little white bones and rocks, and then someone said, yeah, fossil fuels. And I don't know for sure, but it sounds like something I would do. I don't know. I'm pretty sure I did this, but I can't say where or when. You know, went to a teacher when I was like 5 or 6 years old with a rock with a fossil in it, and said, "So you mean oil comes from this?" Well, no, not exactly. Well, this is a fossil. So do fossil fuels come from fossils? Well, the answer is, as far as I'm concerned, no. You know, you're not going to get dinosaur bones turning into oil. If it did, then how would we have any dinosaur bones to find? The fact that we find fossils shows that fossil fuels don't really come from fossils, do they? Because if fossils became fossil fuels, then we wouldn't have fossils. I mean, if dinosaur bones are buried and apparently the organic material squishes down and becomes oil, then what, you mean the bones don't become oil? I mean, they're organic. So how is it we have bones? How can we have bones not turning to oil when the whole rest of the dinosaur turns to oil? That doesn't make any sense. What, oil doesn't come from bones? But it comes from skin and organs and everything else? Really? You know, I don't believe that. But the bones get locked in the rock, and we're supposed to believe that the same stuff that gets locked in rock, you know, to power our automobiles? I don't think so. That makes no sense. You know, so again, people believe things that they're told. The biggest problem we have is that people believe what they're told, not what they think through. And so you really have to think through stuff. You don't just believe what you're told, because that we're told all kinds of things. We're told that Brandon is the president, when we know he's not. You know, we're told, any number of things. I'm just going to check my messages and see if my folks have checked in. No, not yet. So hopefully they got this hour right. If not, we're just going to roll along. But people believe all kinds of things. They believe, look at the big revelations, the big revelations of the past since Monday. We've been doing a lot of groundbreaking work here at Action Radio. So Dr. Roger Roots, he was on for 2 hours. He's a professor. He's a lawyer. And we showed conclusively that all that land out west that the feds are hanging on to is not federal land at all. It's state land. And the states can take it over. In fact, I wrote, there's a state representative I know in Arizona. And she posted a Facebook thing. And I said, well, when are you guys going to take your land back from the feds? Put a copy of the show up there. So it would be nice. That would be nice if just one state out west would say, you know what? this is federal land. Well, feds, it's been nice having you here, but it's time to go. So just, pack up your toys and go home. And this is now state land, and we don't need you anymore. We don't need the Bureau of Land Management. We don't need the National Forest Service. We don't need any of the other, anything else in the Department of the Interior. We don't need you here. Just go away. It's state land. It's always been state land. It was never federal land once we became a state. So get your asses out. That's what they should do. So that's the first revelation. The second revelation that we talked about in great detail is that carbon dioxide is a wonderful thing. The more carbon dioxide, the better, up to a certain point. But right now at 350 parts per million, we would be much better off at maybe 2,000 parts per million. Okay. Again, the nuclear submarines, they don't get concerned until it's 8,000 parts per million. Well, that's a lot of carbon dioxide. There's a big difference between 8,000 and 350 parts per million. That's a huge difference. So we don't need 8,000 parts per million. That might be a bit much. But there's no reason to think that the Earth wouldn't be a lot better, greener, happier, healthier, and with a lot more food if we had somewhere in the neighborhood of 1,000 to 2,000 parts per million of carbon dioxide. So we actually need more of it. I was talking to a friend of mine last night saying, you notice all the plants along the highways? Well, why are plants growing along the highways? Well, because they're getting blasted with carbon dioxide out of the tailpipes. Right? So carbon dioxide's a good thing. That's how greenhouse works. It raises the temperature and it pumps in carbon dioxide. So we proved that's a good thing too. So all this nonsense about you can't burn oil, you can't burn, what they're calling fossil fuels, which aren't, you can't burn this stuff because it creates CO2 and that therefore warms the earth and we're all going to die. That's a bunch of nonsense because the scientists have proven, the climate scientists, the real ones, the climate geologists, the folks that look at the climate, a million years ago, they take the cores of, ice up in the Arctic that go, back 50, 60, 100,000 years, however long these ice, cores are, and they study the atmosphere and the oxygen content and the CO2 content and all that kind of stuff. The Earth was a lot greener and warmer, when the dinosaurs were around. It was greener and warmer when the Vikings went to Greenland, when Greenland was green. Okay, so all this happened. We've had warmer periods. We've had more carbon dioxide. We've had more plants, and the Earth was just fine. In fact, it was great. More stuff grows, more food. It's a wonderful thing. You want more food? You want to help more people get food? Let the temperature warm up. But the truth is that what they found is the climate geologists found that the Earth warms first and then the carbon dioxide increases. So carbon dioxide is a byproduct of warming. Warming is not a product of carbon dioxide. So with that established, it's easy to, get your, Corvette, 1961 Corvette, 450 engine, and go burn some gasoline. You're not doing anything. You're not harming anything. The Earth can absorb it, compared to, like I say, not compared to volcanoes. There's more ash and sulfur dioxide and nitrous oxide. You know, there's more stuff, more, you know, noxious chemical sulfurs and everything else. There's more stuff released in a volcano in one eruption than probably all the cars that have ever been made. You know, and the air's so much cleaner now anyway because it's really clean engines, which is a good thing. Hey, environmentalists, you did a good job. Now shut up and go home. Environmentalists, you did a great job. You know, we raised the consciousness. You know, we had Earth Day back in 1970 when the air was really disgusting. I know, I was alive in 1970. And so, you know, the Earth, you know, we cleaned it up. You know, free markets work. The free market capitalist economies are the cleanest. They just are because people demand it. I mean, that's a competitive edge to make a cleaner, more efficient engine. Socialist countries don't care because, you know, first of all, most people can't have a car anyway. It doesn't matter, right? So, and they're still even dirtier than we are. So we've got clean engines, we've got great efficiency, we've got great economy, and we've got this wonderful amount of energy from the earth that makes oil. You know, and so it's not a problem to make it. It's not a problem to burn it. None of this stuff is a problem. And yet we get all this garbage from the government that was stolen by the government, you know, and kept by the government, for the government, of the government, certainly not by the people, for the people, of the people. You know, we've got this government running the government for themselves, for their government privilege, their government supremacy, and everything they're doing is wrong. And if they just leave us alone, you know, let us drill for oil that the earth makes, let us burn, you know, fuel and put carbon dioxide into the air because it's good for us, it's good for the plants, and it's good for the plants, it's good for us because they breathe in carbon dioxide and give up oxygen. And if we would just stop regulating everything and stop these ridiculous wars all over the place like Ukraine, Afghanistan, and Iraq, where we talked yesterday about having a president, you know, has a vice president that has an energy company. You know, it's fascinating. Or in the case of Clinton and Hillary, you know, so you've got, so we went through Bush the Younger with Dick Cheney and Halliburton. We went with Clinton with Hillary Clinton and Uranium One. We went with Obama, you know, with Joe Biden and Burisma. You know, and Trump was actually pretty good, but Trump has an interesting connection to a Ukrainian Armenian oil company, which is battling with Burisma. You know, so there's actually an oil war going on in Ukraine right now that nobody really knows about, except I happen to find some articles on that. And now we're talking about $5 gasoline for it. There's no reason gasoline should probably be above $1.50. I mean, if we had the mindset that CO2 is no problem, that there's plenty of oil in the earth because the earth makes it, that we can burn all we want, it's great for the economy. Gasoline probably be, what, $1 a gallon maybe? Maybe $1.50? Maybe? I don't know. It's not going to be much. Anyway, let's get Bianca in the line and see what's going on. So my drag racers couldn't make it, it looks like. So here we are again. It's another Wednesday morning. I really get the time, but they're busy. They got kids. Life is crazy, and you know, who knows. Good morning, Bianca. What do you think of our revelations of the last week or so? It's been an interesting week.
Well, you know, what you're saying is absolutely right when you talk about the energy.
Mm-hmm.
And when you talk about the government running the government and for the benefit of the government.
Mm-hmm.
And when you say government, you mean the people of so much notoriety in government that's always, whose name is always out there in the news. It's a shame what Joe Biden is doing and his connections with the Ukraine. Then one can say it's a shame what the leader in Ukraine is doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can understand Russians. Russians have what you call post-traumatic World War II syndrome.
Yeah.
And when you experience something horrific and terrible, and as you watch it happen and you looked at the telltale signs before, during, and after, well, when you begin to see them again, you begin to get nervous. It's not that you want to be a purveyor and projector of violence and aggression. No, you're protecting yourself. And, you know, it's a shame when you look at how these other countries who are part of the government, running the government,
mm-hmm.
they're in on some elements of them are in on this too. Now, you know what, Greg? In the long run, it's people that suffer.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It's innocent people that all they want to do is live and let live. And they're the one that's getting caught up and suffer.
Well, it's frustrating for me, and I've been talking to friends about this, as to how we can reach more people in the show. But a lot of the problem is the people themselves. They won't do anything. You know, we've got answers here to all kinds of problems. I've got an article here on this $1.5 trillion bill, this pork bill the Democrats rammed through in the wee hours of the morning that nobody read. It's 3,000 pages of BS. And I have a bill to have an entire public comment period for budgets that they can't be voted on until they've received some scrutiny, and they have to be read by the members of Congress and all this other kind of stuff. We have the solutions. The solutions aren't the problem. It's people making noise about it is the problem. There's so much apathy out there right now, and people have been so disempowered, and they feel so weak that they're actually spending $5 a gallon rather than screaming and yelling. You know, where are the pickets? Where are the demonstrations in the streets? Where is anything? You know, where are the constant calls to the White House? Well, that's not going to do any good. But the point is that, you know, we should have the Western states, as we showed, should be opening up their land to oil and gas exploration and uranium exploration. You know, the country should be, you know, screaming and yelling. All the people should be saying CO2 is a good thing. Stop worrying about it. There is no global warming. I mean, this should be on a massive scale. This should be in editorials, you know, in news all over the country by decent journalists who are actually reporting on the issue. They should be looking into the ridiculous cost of suppressing the oil market by capping, you know, the wells and stopping the leases and stopping the pipelines and stopping even any kind of exploration on federal land that isn't even federal land. You know, this is a massive withholding suppression of energy for social engineering. And the problem is that social engineering sucks, because what they're trying to do is force solar and wind on a country that would be so much better off with oil because the earth makes it and CO2 is not a problem. So none of this makes sense.
Well, you know, I've got a solution. When a person is elected to Congress or elected to the U.S. Senate, give them $2 million. Just give them $2 million and say, now, go ahead and run things like they should be run for the benefit of people. That way you don't have to worry about hiding, stealing, conniving, and doing other things. Just give them $2 million.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, it's an interesting idea. It's worth considering.
You know I'm kind of being facetious, but you understand where I'm getting at.
Yeah, no, I know.
Because the policies that we see coming down is not doing well at all. And you are absolutely
who are they for?
Right.
Yeah. If you look at every policy in terms of who is it for, it's for the government. The government makes policies for the government. It's the government that's shutting off our oil because they don't care. It's the government that's creating inflation by overspending so they can get reelected. They don't care that they're crashing the economy. You know, did you ever imagine
what? That states would be so lackadaisical? The states don't utilize the powers that they have. And you're right, again, as we have been talking about, this thing about federal land is nothing more than something that has been beaten in. Of course, it started off back during the settlement, then the expansions to the west. But that land belongs to the state. And as you mentioned, there's nothing in the Constitution that says that some of these land holdings that the federal government has now, they should need not be holding them.
No, they shouldn't be on the land. In fact, you have departments that don't need to exist. Why do you need a Bureau of Land Management if there's no federal land in the states? It's all state land. Why do you need a Forest Service? Why do you need half the Department of the Interior? Why do you need a Bureau of Indian Affairs? Why do you need any of these organizations or these departments? You know, none of them. I mean, Indian Affairs should be taken care of by Indians. You know, all the forest land, federal land, all that's not federal land anyway. It's state land. So you could, you want to cut the budget a bit, cut out the Department of the Interior. We probably don't need it because the interior is the states. And if the interior is the states, there's no reason for a federal Department of the Interior, because basically that's the federal department over the states, and that's unconstitutional. So there you guys, I just saved several billion dollars. Cut the Department of the Interior. Get rid of it.
And just like we talk about the Constitution, the Constitution does not need interpreting. What you interpret is laws that governments make that effectively take power away from people.
Yeah, that's tomorrow's show. Tomorrow I'm going to get Jonathan, and when we talk some of the legal stuff, we'll talk about this new the black privilege candidate who's being nominated for the Supreme Court. But I got to look her up probably tonight, do some research. But the whole the interpretation thing is completely wrong. And who told us that they could interpret the law? The Supreme Court did in their own case, Marbury versus Madison. They said, we are the interpreters of the law. We are going to give ourselves power. We are going to go beyond the Constitution. We're going to create our own authority. We're not going to let anybody else do it, but we're going to do it for ourselves. And we're going to tell you what the Constitution says. That should have caused all of them to be removed from the court, especially John Marshall. Should have been, the entire Supreme Court should have been replaced on Marbury versus Madison alone, because they all voted for it. The whole Supreme Court voted for it. It was a unanimous decision.
Well, you know, here's the thing. I notice now they're attacking Clarence Thomas again, as they always do, because some of the activities that his wife is doing, okay? But
what's his wife doing?
You have had cases. Well, she's volunteering, and she's talking to conservative groups and so on, so on, so on.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, it's all like what we do. But, hey, you had Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and you had Kagan on the issue of same-sex marriage. Remember when that passed with 5-4?
Yeah, that was
illegal.
Well,
those two should have,
they don't have authority over that.
Those two should have recused themselves.
Yeah.
You know why?
I do,
because
actually, because I read the article. Go ahead, say it.
Yeah,
they're
engaged in same-sex marriage. That
yeah.
there is, they should have recused themselves. That's bias there.
Mm-hmm.
They married
couples. Well, exactly. You can't be unbiased, you know, on a case of creating the same-sex marriage for the nation, which, of course, the Supreme Court can't make policy. That's not their job. So everything they did about that was wrong. They should have recused themselves. They created a policy, which they can't do. They interpreted the Constitution, which they can't do. You know, there's nothing in the Constitution covering marriage. Therefore, they have no jurisdiction over marriage. It's a state issue. So everything they did about it was wrong. It's just like Roe v. Wade. It's just like most of the things they do. They, you know, not only should they have recused themselves, the entire Supreme Court should have recused itself because they don't have any jurisdiction. You know, I mean, they should never have taken the case. You know, it's funny, the cases they don't take the cases they have to take, which are the election cases, you know, the Trump electors versus the Brandon fraud electors. They don't take those. They don't take that case. I mean, that's what they're mandated to do. But they do take cases like gay marriage where they have no jurisdiction. They have no jurisdiction over health, education, all that kind of stuff. They did have jurisdiction over Brown versus Board of Education because that wasn't an education issue. That was an equality issue. And they did, ever since the 14th Amendment, they absolutely had jurisdiction there. So I just want to make that clear for folks, just in case you're all confused.
And not only that.
Yeah.
Not only that, with Brown versus the board, you had the state of Nebraska who had settled that at a state level back in 1869 when they'd done away with segregated schools.
Most states
over
100
years, 90 years before.
You know, it amazes me that I was alive, you know, when there was segregation in the United States. And I wasn't even in the United States. I was in Canada and Australia. So I never saw it, you know, firsthand. But the idea that I was alive at a time when black people didn't sit at the same table that I could sit at, it just stuns me. It just is like, wait a minute. I thought that, you know, it's like, you know, when you think about the Holocaust happening in the 40s, and even that's still recent history. And you think of you know, the incredible cruelty of the Nazis, you know, against the Jews and everybody else. But that happened before I was alive. So it seems like that's kind of like a distant past. Segregation happened while I was alive. You know, I never saw it. I learned about it in school. But I was, you know, I was around before 1964. You know, so therefore, you know, I was around before the Civil Rights Act. So there's
well,
the time I was alive, there's
the
actually
thing.
Segregation. And that to me
here's
is rather shocking. Go ahead.
Here's the thing with segregation.
Mm-hmm.
There's two forms of segregation. One is the jure, de jure, which is government-sponsored, which is illegal. The other is de facto. That's when people do it on their own will and their own freedom and liberty. It's not illegal for de facto segregation. If whites, blacks, Italian have a event that's for them only, they want to segregate to one side of the lunchroom, they want to segregate to the back of the bus, that's their business. It's only when government comes in and say, this is what you have to do, that is precisely wrong. And you know who ruled on that? It was Clarence Thomas in a case called Jenkins versus Missouri. And that's another reason why people hate him, because they think that government is supposed to set the criteria and the standard for things like on where people seat, who you indulge with. Human beings would do things naturally as they have been doing forever, just perfectly fine for themselves without government input.
Yeah, it actually comes under freedom of association. So in the freedom of association, the Boy Scouts should be for boys. Under freedom of association, the Columbus Association should be for Italians. You know, even though he went through Spain, that's a kind of funny story, actually. You look at any organization, you know, the Congressional Black Caucus, I don't have a problem with that being members that are black. That's what they call themselves. I think it's kind of discriminatory in Congress to do that. But the thing is, that's a freedom of association. As long as they're not, you know, making official government policy and ruling and doing all kinds of stuff. I don't know. But the thing is, it's okay to have different groups. You know, Little League is for kids. You know, we don't want adults, in, you know, playing baseball in the Little League. You could say they discriminate. I could say they select. They select different people for their group. You know, environmental clubs should have environmentalists. Chess clubs should have chess players. You know, I mean, you can't force your way in. And this is one of the big problems of the left. Now they've got men swimming in women's sports and playing women's tennis and doing all kinds of other things. That's wrong. There's a case where women should be limited to women for women's sports because it's for women.
Yeah,
you know, and there's nothing wrong with that. That should be. Yeah, yeah.
When you talk about Congressional Black Caucus, now mm-hmm. you're really talking about some racism when they have a standing rule that no white congressperson can be a member of, even mm-hmm. if they represent a majority black constituency that voted for them, like Steve Cohen in Memphis. I think it's the 5th Congressional District, which encompasses Shelby County. He mm-hmm. represents a majority constituency of blacks. But because his skin is white, he cannot join the Congressional Black Caucus. They have a standing rule. Because you have some black conservatives, Republicans in Congress, they can't become a member of the CBC neither. Now,
it's
racism
black caucus.
At the highest level.
Oh, it's absolutely
that is
racism
at the highest level of government, and nobody says anything.
Yeah. Well, no, we are. You know, but the thing is, it's not something that creates law for people. The Congressional Black Caucus does not pass by themselves laws. They do. I mean, they have their own organization, but they don't regulate racial stuff within the rest of Congress. You know, they don't regulate how many members can join. They don't say that you have to have a certain percentage of black members of Congress. I mean, they're not making official policy. They're just forming an organization, a racist organization within the Congress, you know, for their own self-promotion, what they want to do. So quite frankly, I don't care about that. That's not the problem. The problem is, you know, like I say, during civil rights, actual government policies of segregation, that's wrong. Now it's a different thing, too. Now they have segregation the opposite way. You know, it's a reward system rather than a punishment. It used to be punishment. You can't dine at this lunch counter. Now it's a reward. We're going to give you 300 extra points on the SAT. You know, so there's still segregation going on, but it's a different kind of – it's a reward segregation as opposed to a punishment segregation, which is kind of interesting when you think about it, of how these things are working. But Clarence Thomas is the most interesting person, I think, in government today, because he's the person that proves, you know, black stereotypes wrong. He's the wrong black person. He's the bad black person. He's not the good black person. So now they're going to put the good black liberal on the Supreme Court to counter the bad black conservative. And the fact that they're both black drives black liberals nuts, because here you got Clarence Thomas not being black enough. And it's a fascinating phenomenon. He just disproves everything. He just shows, you know, that independent, free-thinking black people is a good thing, which always was. But it's just, the black liberal lobby doesn't want independent, free-thinking black people. They want the leftists.
Well, you're right. You know why? Because you got some elements here in the society, a black society, that wants to have separate this, separate that.
Mm-hmm.
And that can't exist because all blacks don't think alike. And that's another thing that some don't like also.
Yeah.
They want them
yeah.
all to think alike. They want them all to march to the same tune. They want mm-hmm. them all to bow to the same leader. And that just is not possible.
Well, and it's interesting, too, because you don't have leftist white people requiring all white people to think alike. You know, it's a fascinating phenomenon because black population is a Democrat-controlled population. At least they want to make that, but you never see them going out and say, well, this person's not white enough. I mean, they're a traitor to their race. They're not being, you know, white correctly. You know, you just don't hear, well, I mean, maybe some people, I don't know. I haven't heard it. No one's accused me of you know, not being white enough for whatever white I'm supposed to be. Kind of cracks me up. Anyway.
Well, it should correct you up because when you get to thinking about it, once you know what it is you're talking about and looking at, it's really nuts. It's like you had the graduating class of Bethune College when the last Secretary of Education, Du Bois, was there doing a commencement speech. You had mm-hmm. practically everyone, and this is a black college, they stood mm-hmm. up and turned their back to her. Now, not all, but a lot did. those young people had to be encouraged by somebody outside to do that. Mm-hmm. There's no way in the world that many would do the same thing unless they was being encouraged by some absent-minded adults to do that. You receive knowledge and information from people no matter what the color of their skin is, no matter what their political affiliation is or religious affiliation. Everyone mm-hmm. has something to offer that can help better your outcomes.
Absolutely. Let's talk about black colleges for a minute because I'm kind of curious. Those were formed because, I guess, is it were they mostly in the South because of the white colleges, or there were white colleges were just not accepting black students, or was it a better education that was available, you know, to black students in predominantly white colleges? What was the original idea of black colleges? And did they start like right after the Civil War? Or when did they get going?
Well, there's many different reasons. No particular one. Some people say because whites built them for their mulatto children. Then you have, in some cases, like with Lincoln, where black soldiers built them, built one, Lincoln University, because the opportunity exists for blacks at the same time. So there's many different reasons across the spectrum.
Mm-hmm. Do you think they're still necessary?
Well, yeah, they offer, you know, you have like Tuskegee, for instance, it offers a lot, not only just for blacks, but it offers a lot for the nation. Mm-hmm. You have things that's going on there now in experiments with the potato that is going to be associated with the Mars expedition. So, yes, there's good things that can come out of it. Yes, that means just a university. It's, you know, you have blacks that go to white universities and contribute. And you have the opposite. You have just the opposite. So it's a university that offers something in particular. I like those types. It's very difficult to put something that's good for everything under one roof, but it works better when it's segregated, really, for its own kind. A jet propulsion. Well, you can't put that along with agriculture or put that along with economics. It just don't work too very well.
Interesting. I was thinking of like women's colleges. Cause a lot of times women do better in a non-male environment. There's a different, you know, they're I guess more free to compete and do, you know, they don't feel like they have to, I guess the stereotype is women, you know, don't want to appear brighter than the guys they're hanging out with. So they don't excel in certain things after a certain age, which is a real tragedy. You know, especially I know so many bright women, a lot of them are on this show. But it's just interesting that different groups. I mean, I went to an all-boys school in Australia for a few years. And, you know, at that age, I didn't know what girls were. It didn't matter. And then I come to the United States and all of a sudden, oh, girls, this is interesting. You know, and I went back to a public school. But I was like, you know, a young teenager, so that made a lot more sense. But during the time I went to an all-boys school, you know, I had a great time. We were doing sports. We were doing these massive field trips. I had a fabulous education. You know, I was involved in music programs and everything else that was going on. And the fact there weren't girls there was, you know, no big deal because at that point in my life, I didn't care. But, you know, a lot of times people do better in single-sex environments until, you know, a certain age. And so that's discrimination. I mean, why would you have a boys' school and a girls' school? Well, it seems to work for kids. For certain kids especially, you know, to excel at who they are, not have the pressure of being, you know, around the opposite sex for whatever years that's beneficial. So these kind of discrimination things go on all the time. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with making decisions of associating with who you want to associate with. I never liked the expression your own kind because that never made sense to me. You know, or people, the Obama's, you know, thing of people, you know, people only like people who look like them. Well, I don't know who looks like me, you know, and quite frankly, I don't care. You know, because I never considered myself how I look. It really, that never entered into, you know, my thinking. We've talked about this before. I grew up in a race devoid culture where, not that we didn't have different races, we did, but we never talked about it because the concept of race didn't exist in my childhood. It just wasn't there. And so because of that, you know, I got a really nice outlook on life. I wish more people had the benefit of that. You know, I had to learn about racism in the United States. Like, what's the big deal? What, different skin colors? So what? I've been around different skin colors all my life. It never, you know, I recognized it, but it just never had an effect that meant anything to me. Anyway, I just found that.
That concept didn't exist with me neither. I tell people when they tell me about these stories and they talk about, well, we weren't allowed this, we were this, that. I said, well, you know, I didn't experience that.
Yeah.
I just didn't experience that. And I came up in a amongst people, white, black, and Jamaicans and Pakistanians. I just didn't experience those. Italians especially. I didn't experience that.
Yeah.
And things and they have to respect that you didn't experience that because you have a unique position other than what they're trying to promote.
Well, people just have to stop prejudging. You don't see a black person or a white person or an Asian person and just start making assumptions. That's when things tend to go out the window. And I want to change the subject a little bit here. We've got actually, we probably have, because 7 o'clock hour is open too, we might have a couple hours to kind of hash through a bunch of things, which could be interesting. I found this thing in Survival Magazine. I was trying to get different sources for news just to get different takes on this. This is from March 11th, so pretty recently, like last week sometime. House passes massive $1.5 trillion omnibus spending package, nearly 3,000-page bill released just hours before the vote after 1:30 a.m. And so this is economic suicide. This is economic treason. These massive bills. And then people wonder why there's inflation. This is the government stealing the government, serving the government, paying for the government with your money in ways that, if you put this to a referendum across the country, or you had like state referendums on the federal budget, this would never pass. And yet people keep voting for the people that keep doing this. But let's go over some of the spend. Well, let's just talk about that for a while. Our budgeting process. We don't have one. They can pass. If you could pass $1.5 trillion with nobody reading the bill, we've got a problem in Congress. Let's see if you have a comment on that. And then I'm going to read some of the article here. It's really interesting.
I think you're right. Why are you passing stuff? Pelosi's famous words, you have to pass it before you can read it.
Yeah, you got to pass the bill to see what's in it. Yeah, exactly. That's like, well, we have to repair your car first, and then we'll tell you what was wrong with it, and then we'll pay for it now, and, pay up front, and then we'll tell you what's wrong with it after we, find enough stuff that justifies however much you paid. Yeah, exactly. Article says, in another jaw-dropping dereliction of duty by our elected representatives, see, I like this source, the U.S. House of Representatives approved a massive pork-stuffed $1.5 trillion omnibus spending package on Wednesday, despite not having any time at all to review its nearly 3,000 pages of content. The bill includes $13.6 billion in aid for Ukraine and European allies, and will fund the federal government through September 30th, which means we have to do it all again, right before the midterm elections, September 30th, if it is passed through the Senate later this week. I don't know if it passed the Senate or not. We can check that out in the news. Anyway, it says on Tuesday night, the Democrat-controlled House Rules Committee held a meeting in the dead of the night at 1:30 a.m. to finalize the $1.5 trillion spending package. After meeting for an hour, they released the final text of the bill just before 3 a.m., which gave lawmakers less than 12 hours to scramble and read its contents before the vote, which was set for 1:30 in the afternoon the next day. Most lawmakers, if not all of them, weren't awake when the bill was released, so they did not receive it until morning, leaving them just a few hours before having to submit a decision. Despite last-minute release, the defense portion of the legislation passed 361-69. Well, that's a problem, too. We've got some massive defense spending that we don't need. While the domestic spending portion passed 260-171 with one present vote. Well, that's a brave stand. In a Twitter post on Wednesday morning, Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene slammed House Speaker Pelosi and her, quote, handpicked committee for the underhanded tactics as she announced the incident. Greene also uploaded a video online to express her outrage over the situation. Yeah, she's one of the very few people that's decent in Congress. Marjorie Taylor Greene. I've tried calling her. I'd love to get her on the show, and we'll see what happens if, I'm not in their district, but I'd love to get Marjorie Taylor Greene on the show just because of who she is. Anyway, the article says the America First representative explained that she was still shocked about getting blindsided by the absolutely horrendous bill and called the legislative process completely broken right now due to Democrats' unwavering partisanship and Pelosi corruption. Nancy Pelosi should be completely unseated as Speaker of the House. Well, yeah, we've all known that, but they don't do it. And the Democrats aren't going to do it because they'll lose their committee chairs. The Republicans don't seem to want to win. And when they do win, they appoint a speaker who's pretty much like Nancy Pelosi. So we got this massive budget, and I have a cure. I have a bill that would fix this. Let me see if I can just get you a couple more here. It says, just like other massive federal spending packages, this one is chocked full of terrible spending and horrific policy proposals, some of the worst which have been found, buried in the thousands of pages, were highlighted by GOP reps Chip Roy of Texas, Jim Banks of Indiana, who both spoke with Daily Wire. The pair call out provisions that will include a massive amount of foreign spending, as well as millions of dollars being funneled to Planned Parenthood. Oh, there, that's a worthwhile cause. Now that the package has made its way past Congress, it will face a tough hurdle in the Senate, albeit one which is likely to pass, yeah, thanks to the support of several rhinos like Mitch McConnell, who has been advocating for the spending bill to include even more aid for Ukraine than the Democrats had originally planned. So there you go. This is just a massive, massive spending, and it just keeps going. There is no debt ceiling. They keep doing this. And that leads to the next thing, which, of course, is the reserve currency, the fact that Saudi Arabia might be buying oil in the yuan, the Chinese currency. So comment on spending, and then I've got a bill I want to read you just some of the provisions of that would fix this. We've got the cure. Like most things, we have the cure already.
You know,
so far.
You could not thumb through 3,000 pages in a lot of time that they're given. And then the read and decipher and comprehend what you're reading is no way possible. And then, you know, you make mention about something like Planned Parenthood. Now, nobody's saying women should not have the right to health care. Everybody should have at some way in me. But I don't know why blacks are not up in arms on this. If you look at the number of black babies that have been aborted since the Roe decision, for whatever reason, that's what I always like to say, for whatever reason, you know what that would look like in real life? If 15 states, and I think I sent you that email, if 15 states, you took out every black face in those states, you just wake up tomorrow morning, all gone. That's what the number of abortions look like within, I say, 30 years after Roe. Not up into 2022, but 30 years after the 1973-1972 court decision. They all gone.
Yeah, I know. I think I remember reading something about what's the black population in the United States? About 13 million, something like that? Wouldn't
black
it be
population
like...
in the United States is around 39 million. I'd say short of 40. People like to inflate it a little bit, but you're adding other people who have black skin who don't follow the same philosophy and also political stance. So I
must
say
be confused. It must have been 13% of the population I heard then. All right. So let's do this. So we'll go 330 million, 330 times 0.13 would be 42 million. Yeah, 43 million people. Okay. So the point being, that the 40 million black Americans would be what, 80, 90 million without abortions? You know, if black lives matter, then we've lost half our black population or more than half our black population to abortions. And of course, every abortion means, you know, no grandkids, you know, no other kids, no kids and no grandkids. You know, so there's this massive chain effect of these abortions on black Americans. The numbers are staggering. You know, it literally is an abortion holocaust when you look at it. And if Black Lives Matter meant anything, that'd be the first place they would go, would be to close down Planned Parenthood. So what is
Well, then
is
you
the,
take the crime that's involved with the group. I think I was reading the Washington Post article that said over 35-year period, black males killed 324,000 of each other. Then you look at the prison population, 800,000. Then you look at your domestic crime that's going on, like Chicago, where you don't had over 3,700 shots in a period of about 280 days and over close to 600 murders.
Yeah. You know, I should
think that's worse
than
Ukraine.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, we have a war going on right in our own country, but they don't recognize that. We're fighting for Ukraine's border, but we don't have our own border. You know, it's wide open. You know, we lose how many people a weekend in Chicago? You know, you've got young black men shooting other young black men at horrendous levels. You know, but it really comes down to Democrats. Democrats are responsible for this. These are Democrat-controlled cities. These are Democrat politicians with Democrat socialist policies that are killing huge numbers of people. They kill in abortions. They kill in gangs. They kill in crime. They kill in human despair. They kill in government dependency. You know, Democrats are death, you know, to a large percentage of the population in this country. I mean, they really are. They represent death. If not physical death, death of the spirit, death of hope, death of opportunity, death of everything. They're the death party.
Yeah.
Once you start calling them that. They really are the death party when you look at them.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the schools, the kids are dying in the schools because they're not having anything that's going to nurture their minds so they can live.
Their brains are dead. They're being killed.
Then you look at your court systems. Mm-hmm. You look at your court systems where you got criminals, black criminals, that are allowed to get minimum sentences, and no sentence hardly when they do something against somebody else black. But now you're starting to see the same thing perpetrated on white victims too. Now, we want justice to be served no matter what. We want it to be blind the way the statutes predict. I'm not predict, but the way the statutes portray. But it's not happening.
I know what you mean. Yeah, it's, and the two things that would help most, fathers and a rising middle class of black Americans, those two things, if you stop having the government separate families through single mother welfare and everything else like that, if the black population in this country reestablished values that the black population had for most of our history, of really strong extended families, strong churches, and move the, bring back fathers and bring back a middle class, a rising black middle class would go a long way to solving most of these problems. Getting out from government dependency, getting out from public housing, public education, public transit, substandard public services and everything else. A substandard government provided life, but a rising independent middle class, all throughout the country. Would be, I think, the two best things that could happen.
Yeah, and you get back to education and stop putting so much emphasis on sports, especially too, basketball and football, where you have coaches that's looking at middle school students. Now, somebody told me at some point in time in these players' lifespan, they are stripped down to nothing but shorts, and then they are observed by coaches who's looking for certain physical attributes that would make them good for the game. Now, does that not mind you of a slave market?
Oh, it sounds exactly. I mean, do they take a stick and kind of poke and prod? Do they check their teeth? I mean, are they treated like farm animals? I mean, that's what it sounds like.
Well, yeah, exactly. And then when you have that type of operation going on, then ultimately it's bad if it becomes a national security issue. And then it becomes an exploited issue. If what you said, if you have more of these people allowed in this segment of society, allowed to pursue their furthest extent, then they wouldn't need these democratic policies. They wouldn't
This is something I find fascinating, too. So if you take black middle-class families, white middle-class families, Asian middle-class families, Jewish middle-class families, Christian middle-class families, is there any real difference between them if they're middle-class? If they are, mom, dad, and the kids, a car or two, usually one or both parents working, halfway decent government schools, if there are any. Is there any difference, really, in the lifestyles, the attitudes, other than individual differences? But, I mean, could you tell?
Well, one
if you
thing
couldn't
that
tell
they
skin
do.
Color, if you couldn't tell skin color, would you see radical differences between black middle-class families, white middle-class families, Asian middle-class families, Native American pick any group you want. But let's just do white and black because that seems like the obvious contrast. Do you see a difference between black middle-class families and white middle-class families in terms of lifestyle choices, politics? Are there big, huge differences? I don't think so.
They usually, when you're in certain economic classes, you usually gravitate to the same type of lifestyle. But look at this, though. If you take some African families, whether it's Jamaicans in Jamaica, Queens, some area, or if you take Nigerians who have a higher educational attainment than many other ethnic groups, including whites and Asians, you look at their families, and see what they're able to produce, especially along the academic areas where you have a mother and father with multi-degrees in areas that's of high demand. And their skin is just as black as anybody else's. And you don't hear the same type of cries that come out for them. Those are the ones that need to be studied and mimic it and see what it is that they're doing.
Yeah, you know, I never really thought about that. That's a really good point, that whenever the stereotype, the black victim, it's always an American black victim. It's never an immigrant group black victim. You never hear about the plight of Nigerians. You never hear about the suffering of Jamaicans, you know, in this country as an oppressed economic racial group. It just doesn't happen. Because they don't fit the stereotype. Jamaicans and Nigerians defy the stereotype because you don't find a dependent population.
You do have some black community populations in small towns like in Texas and DeSoto and in there in Maryland with the Columbia Heights and Lanier Heights, where you have schools that have tremendous performance that's going on, 80-some-odd percent. In math proficiency, 90% in reading proficiency in majority black schools. What is it that these families are doing that you don't see commonplace elsewhere?
Yeah, good question. They're actually working with their kids. Well, the two examples I think of is Jaime Escalante, who was the math teacher, and just went to regular school and turned out, you know, state champion calculus students, just of regular students, okay? The woman who did the Freedom Writers, I forgot her name. She's an English teacher. And she is in a regular government school, just happened to be whatever one she was at, turning out world-class writers. So what it comes down to is that the kids can be brilliant, but they're not given the opportunity because their teachers are substandard. Their teachers suck compared to these ones. And these people should be the model. Jaime Escalante and I forgot the woman's name who did the Freedom Writers. There's movies made of both of them. Fabulous people. But the students they had were just run-of-the-mill, regular public school students. There's nothing inherently special or brilliant about them. It's just that they got brilliant education. And brilliant education with regular students proves that they could be brilliant. So if they can do that with those students, they can do it with all students if they wanted to. They could teach all – I mean, not every student's going to be a genius. But, you know, you could raise the standards of education in this country by just magnitudes of order by simply having good teachers. I mean, really good teachers, teachers that really care. You know, not –
Well, you
got
to have good
average
teachers and you have to have family. You know, they had a story of a kid down there in Baton Rouge who just graduated from Southern, a class in chemical engineering and also physics. And he's 14, getting ready to go to college.
Yeah.
Now, what type of lifestyle did this young man have that was going on? He made mention that his focus that was instilled by his family was academics.
Yeah, I mean, family is either your greatest success or your worst enemy. In my case, it was the worst enemy. But that's a different story. I succeeded, beyond, my particular situation, as have millions of people in this country. The problem is it sets you back decades. You lose, 20, 30, 40 years of your life to confusion from your childhood. This is why I'm starting, Action Radio at 62 as opposed to, 22. Well, of course, the technology is here too. But that's a different kind of thing. Anyway, let me change things up a little bit here. I got a bill, and I haven't talked about this one a whole lot, but this would be, huge in terms of those of you who are disgusted with Congress doing all this crap in the middle of the night. We have a bill. This is one of the ones I wrote. December 30th, 2019, I released this. The Financial Accountability and Public Disclosure Act of 2019. Let me give you just some of the provisions and show you that we can solve the problems of congressional budgeting, very simple, with a two-page bill, or maybe even a one-page bill. So my solution, without going through the introduction, because we already talked about that, no bill which includes a budget, a continuing resolution, a reset of the debt ceiling, an appropriation, or any bill with an expenditure beyond $100 million shall be put up for a final vote of the House and Senate until there has been a separate, for each bill, public disclosure and comment period of 30 days on a public internet site from the day any such bills are placed in their final form. Publication of any such bill shall take place after all individual votes and any conference votes for both the House and Senate. This bill is intended for public disclosure and comment of the final form of the bill, not bills that are still in process. First provision. Sound good? And I came to know about the 100 million figure. That might be too low. Maybe it should be a billion. But I just picked 100 million because it seemed like a lot of money. You know, enough that it should require public comment. But what do you think? 30-day public comment period for all bills over a certain level. Sound good?
Well, yeah, that's what the Federal Registry is about. It allows comment. It allows comments from the public.
Where do you think I got it from? Basically, I took the regulatory procedure in the Federal Register and I expanded it to. Listen, I'm not above borrowing good ideas. You know, that public comment's a good idea. I just wish they took it more seriously. I wish the public comments actually had an impact. But I basically took the 30-day public comment period and applied it to budget bills. Real simple. Provision two, any amendments of
That already exists with the renewal of tax exempt statuses too, your 501s, this, that, and the other. Well, people don't take advantage of
it. In terms of what? People don't protest?
Yeah, whenever an organization is coming up to renew its tax-exempt status, there's a period where the public can speak out against them being renewed or, you know, you hardly ever hear them supporting it. But that option exists.
Well, let's talk about National Public Radio, National Socialist Government Media. You know, they get funded by tax dollars. They compete unfairly with every other media because they're subsidized. They don't have to advertise. So they have more content because they're being subsidized by taxpayers at the expense of commercial stations and people like me, you know, who we have to raise our own money. You know, we have to play commercials. It's an anti-competitive. There's no reason for National Public Radio, first of all, to be national, you know, or secondly, to be subsidized by anything other than whatever normal, you know, corporate tax situations exist for media companies. They should be treated like every other media company, taxed, licensed, you know, and I don't even like the license idea. I don't think that's a good idea. The whole idea of the FCC bothers me. But be it as it may, they should be treated exactly as, you know, Salem, iHeart, Cumulus. You know, National Public Radio should be public and not national. You know, yeah.
The thing is if you listen to them during Trump administration, they were throwing slop, they were throwing garbage and everything at Trump, and they were so biased and unfair. I stopped listening to them.
Yeah, I stopped listening to them when they all sounded boring. I can do National Public Radio, too. We could actually talk like that here. And now we have a situation brewing in the Ukraine region, and we'll get to it soon after our word from the people who are not advertising with us, Exxon, Mobil. You know, we can do National Public Radio voices all day. Yeah, anyway, another provision of my bill here. Any amendments to any of the bills that fall under the criteria for a 30-day public disclosure and comment period shall, after that period has ended, shall result in an additional 7 days of public disclosure and comment for the amendments, such that no provision of any bill covered by this act makes it into law without some period of disclosure and comment. Here's a big one. There shall be no exceptions to this law except for a declared war by an act of Congress and signed by the president. There shall be no exception because of a recess, holiday, the end of the current session, or any other calendar reason. Plan for all these ahead of time. There shall especially be no exceptions for imminent government shutdowns. If the government shuts down during the 30-day period, comment period, a public disclosure, then it stays shut down until the 30 days are finished. That's one of my favorite provisions. I love that one. So if you screw up, you can't get around this by scheduling a vote, you know, the day before the government shuts down. You still have to have your 30 days. I can't see Congress passing this, but I think it'd be interesting for people to think about the possibility that we could have a bill that mandates a 30-day comment period for any bill over $100 million so that people can take a look at it. That would make sense to me.
Maybe 30 days is not long enough. Maybe they need 60 or maybe 90.
Okay. That might be a decent amendment, and, you know, we get your comment on it. Here's another one. There shall be especially – no, I already said that. Oh, here's another one. There shall especially be no exception to the 30-day comment period for raising the debt ceiling. This, like a government shutdown, are known well in advance. such that the only reason for not planning ahead is to use the time crunch as leverage to pass such measures without any disclosure, even to the members of Congress who vote on such measures. So again, if the debt ceiling is reached before or during the 30-day disclosure and comment period, then the debt ceiling stays where it is, and Congress will be required to cut spending to meet the debt ceiling. Another good point.
See, you could take that to another level.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the way that we see all this conversation about voter reform and doing away with things that they perceive as preventing people from voting. Well, there mm-hmm. should be a method of making people participate in these comment sections, because yeah. ultimately it's going to affect them.
And you notice I don't say voting on these budget matters. There's no provision here for the public to vote. There's no referendum. People can take polls and do whatever they want. But there's no provision in this bill specifically for people to be able to vote on these budget measures, because that would bring us to a democracy. That would bring in the money, the special interests, and that would defeat the purpose of being a republic. So this bill is a purely bill of a republic. In other words, it goes to the legislature. All we're doing with the legislature is forcing a disclosure period and a comment period, so people can comment all they want. In that way, they can certainly provide input, but I'm not having, I specifically do not want to turn this into a democracy. People start voting for Congress because you don't need the Congress. There's reasons for things that are in this bill and there are reasons for things that are not in this bill. And it is not a bill to increase democracy over a republic, specifically for that reason.
And you should get back to the whole premise of apportionment by the states. If mm-hmm. you have a spending bill, it should be revealed how much that would cost each taxpayer, ultimately each citizen. How much? Put a dollar figure out there. So the people who cannot comprehend legalese, they can surely comprehend when they say that you're going to owe this much if this bill passed.
See, that would be up to the journalists to do that, and they could do that rather easily. If you have a bill that's $10 billion, all right, so you divide $10 billion by $303 million, it'd be pretty easy to find out what the cost is per person. If you want to do working people, what's the working population? What's the workforce? $180 million, like about half the people. You take out the old folks, you take out the young folks, you take out the people that can't work, the disabled, take out the lazy bums, take out the welfare people, take out the illegal aliens, and you've got about 200 million people. Let's just say 200 million people working. So you got a $20 billion bill with 200 million divided by 200 million working people. That'd be pretty easy to figure out how much it is per taxpayer or per person. So that's an easy calculation.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know the funny thing about that, your mm-hmm. responsibility for the bill don't make no difference in what region you're coming from nor what employment that you're engaged in.
Mm-hmm.
That's the bill you got to pay. So if you are a dental assistant or whether you are a surgeon, that mm-hmm. is the responsibility that you have to pay.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, and that's – but it's interesting that people who make more money are going to pay more for these things anyway because their taxes are going to be higher. So in that respect, it's per taxpayer, but it's really not, because the people at the lowest end of the tax scale – in fact, a lot of people don't even pay income tax. I think it's over half the population of the United States that does not pay income tax because of mortgage home deduction, the standard deductions, and the fact that we're not making enough money. You know, so a lot of people don't pay tax. Which actually,
well, rather, if you pay it by, even if you pay it through taxes or you pay it through your GPD that's in your pocket, you got to pay mm-hmm. for it. That's another thing
exactly.
How people are fooling the trick. It's a bill that's got to be paid no matter how. See, your taxes is just a means of paying for it. But mm-hmm. ultimately, if you don't have enough tax revenue, a tax going towards your bill, then mm-hmm. you still have a balance that you got to pay.
Yeah. Let me add a few more provisions to this bill, because I think you think you'll find it interesting. I think other folks will find it interesting. Anybody wants to look this up, you go to writeyourlaws.com. You can go to the legislation and then all proposed laws. This is the Financial Accountability and Public Disclosure Act of 2019. So needless to say, I wrote this 3 years ago. You know, it's been around for a while. Well, December 30th of 2019, let's say 2 years ago. But, you know, a lot of these ideas have been around for a while. It's just a question of picking them up. And, you know, I'm still waiting for the first member of Congress. Jerome Bell's been really good. I should send this to Jerome Bell. I think he's been on the show. He's a candidate for Congress in Virginia. And I think Navy chief, black guy, you know, cool, just really interesting person on so many levels. And he's endorsing our bills. He's endorsed the Section 230 communications bill to stop big tech. censorship. He's endorsed the vaccine, full product liability bill. And so let's, those are two big ones I've got with the truckers. But anyway, I should send this to him. He might find this interesting. All right. So let me get you a couple more provisions here that I think you'll find interesting. Number seven, before any bill is released to the public for disclosure and comment, the Congressional Budget Office shall create a summary of the major provisions of the bill and add such charts, graphs, and visual aids as necessary to make the bill clearly understood to regular citizens. All such materials will become part of the record of the bill. Sound good?
That's what we've been talking about for the last 5 minutes. And also, yeah, every congressperson has to bring this back to their constituents in their district. You know, mm-hmm. in the St. Louis area, I never remember Congressman Clay of the first congressional district in Missouri bringing back any town hall meetings explaining Obamacare and how mm-hmm. it was going to affect people short term and long term. That mm-hmm. should be a requirement.
Yeah, so Obama lied about Obamacare. It's kind of interesting. Yeah. Yeah, all right. So it's funny things that we talk about here. I mean, this bill is a result of conversations we have. I think I wrote this. Well, I don't know. No, I think you'd already been calling the show by the time this one came out. There's one person who really liked it. Ann Vandersteel, who does her own media presentation, conservative media person, loved this bill. In fact, I was hoping to work with her on a civil service reform bill, but, you know, all in good time. I'll do my best. Yeah, here's another one too. This act is intended to inspire the media to do in-depth investigations of all such bills covered by this act and report to the public their findings. The media is especially encouraged to report hidden, unrelated, crony, special interest, single company or person beneficiaries, or any codicil of the bill that has the appearance of favorable treatment from any member of Congress to any other group, party, company, or individual, especially if that party in any way contributes to that member. One of my favorite little disclosures.
And you know, it's a funny thing too.
What's that? Greg.
People don't realize, like, they stay in such demise. Just like you just said, you mentioned, if you got a bill for $30,000, it's a bill, it's a debt that you owe. Now, mm-hmm. some people have meaning of paying for it by taxes that's deducted from their income. Okay, mm-hmm. so they can pay the bill off fast. But those who don't have the type of income based on the education that they have or whatever, then they may be able to pay none or some, but they still have a debt. And that debt, some way or another, is always amplified through your future. You're going to live mm-hmm. in a community where you don't have the services or streets and roads and other amenities. It's going to affect your credit. I mean, it may not look like it affects your credit, but it does, because people say, well, hell, you have this debt, although it's been mingled in amongst everything else, but some way or another, it always surfaces, and this is something that you owe it's a liability that's going to affect mm-hmm. your ability to obtain things in the future.
Yeah, student loans come to mind. You know, the incredible yeah. amount of borrowing that people have done. And they're still responsible for paying it back because, you know, you don't punish the people that actually do pay it back. But that's the student loans. I mean, the cost of college is so prohibitive. My solution would be just not to go. If I was a student today, would I go to college? I don't know. I mean, I just seriously think about it. When I went to college, it was very low cost. It was a state university, University of Massachusetts. And I think tuition was $600 a year when I started. And this is back in the late 70s. And by the time I graduated, I think it was like $1,200 a year for tuition. There's nothing. You know, room and board was more expensive. You know, but the actual college tuition, because it was state subsidized. You know, now it's probably $20,000, $30,000 a year. Who knows what it is? Out of state, maybe $50,000. It's a ridiculous – well, I don't know. Whatever it is, it's a ridiculous amount of money that goes to education. So you want to talk about a place that needs some good, you know, exposés, the college student loan, you know, industry. Because the student loans are government controlled now. That in itself is probably one of the biggest problems. They're going to go the way of Social Security and everything else. Let me get you a couple more provisions here. We've got, let me see what I've got. So it says it is the intention of this act that once the information on the bill has been disclosed, the public will then make their views known to their congressional representatives and senators and anyone else, as this will all be public information. Next one, classified information and budgets cannot be made public for specific programs, but the categories of expenditure and the general area of expenditure certainly can. Congress shall ensure that secret information, budgets, programs, and classified material and information are not disclosed. However, classification shall not be used as a tactic to withhold non-classified information that might be embarrassing or a deal or quid pro quo or any other area of interest previously mentioned that if revealed would call into question the necessity, desirability, or even legality of the provision. So this is my classified information section. Let me give you another one here.
Good point.
As you're thinking.
It is absolutely.
Yeah,
I try to cover everything. Those are good points you make.
Yeah, I mean, I really try to cover everything when I can. I think you had one. Well, yeah, and if you have some addition to this bill, let me know, and I'll make sure to write it down because I think you mentioned something earlier and I forgot what it was. But we'll if we revisit that, I've only got like three more here. It is also on behalf of the senators and representatives who want to actually do a good job and be fiscally responsible that this act is being written. So they have the same 30 days of discovery, disclosure, and debate before they have to vote. So I wrote this as much for Congress as anybody else. This is not an anti-Congress bill.
Well, what I add is that the Congress people have to take it back to their districts and have town hall meetings, a number of town hall meetings similar to what they do with the community development block grant allocation.
That's right.
They have meetings for the state, then they have meetings for the local area so they can decide what to do with the money and make sure it's in line with the regulations for spending.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that in some of those CDBG funding that they don't allow you to repair potholes, but they allow you to pave the whole damn street?
Say that again? I was just distracted for a second.
I say if you can't, it used to be, I don't know if it still is, you can't fix a pothole. If you have several potholes in the street, they won't allow you just to fix a pothole, which would be fiscally less. They want you to pave the whole street.
Oh, okay. So that's make work. That's like union projects or union rules or something like that. Yeah. Yeah, I haven't really mentioned unions in this disclosure. I don't see how it would apply, but that's an interesting provision. Yeah, you can't fix one pothole. You have to fix the whole street, even though we do see potholes being fixed. Here's one I think you might find interesting. This is my – I was just talking about democracy. I'd forgotten I put this in. See, I forget what I put in these bills. That's why I have to keep reading them. I wrote – this is provision number 12. It is not the intention of this act to introduce any more democracy into our republic than has already been done. It is not the intention of this act to have the public think that they have any decision power at all over a bill currently before Congress, other than the ability to communicate their views or participate in polls. There is no provision in this act for the citizenry to vote in any way on covered financial bills in advance of being voted on by Congress that has any effect whatsoever on Congress. Such a provision would be prohibited by this act, which reaffirms Congress as the sole legislative power in the federal government. The sole purpose of this act is for opening up the budget process to all members of Congress, the media, and the general public, all for disclosure and comment over a 30-day period for a bill in its final form. And then the last provision is the Office of the Speaker of the House and the Office of the Senate President shall ensure that all bills that fall under the 30-day disclosure and comment period are so designated in the bill itself. Should this fail to happen and the willful avoidance of public disclosure is suspected, any 10 members of the House or any 4 members of the Senate can petition to put such designation on the appropriate bills. Failure to respond to such petitions will table the bills from all further action until the matter is resolved. And that's my public disclosure bill, he's thinking. I don't think the comments you made before about taking this back for town meetings and things like that, that's an excellent idea. I wouldn't – in fact, the various groups – you know, hopefully the Republican groups, the Gelding Party groups, would require their members of Congress to do that anyway. But I wouldn't put it in law. I wouldn't have a procedure by which Congress had to, you know, schedule so many town meetings and things like that. I still want, you know, they still should have the flexibility to do or not to do. And some bills, you know, people aren't going to really make a big fuss over. But $1.3 trillion, oh yeah, they're going to make a fuss over that. And maybe, just maybe, they won't have such big bills. You know, they will actually break them down a little bit, knowing full well that they have to wait 30 days of disclosure before they can vote.
Well, you have to let the people know what's impacting them. Let me tell you a good reason. within mm-hmm. the Obama Caribbean, they put a tax on people that went to this suntanning booth. They had a tax on what they would call Cadillac insurance plans, usually those are the plans that that you see with the commercial construction craft, pipe fitters, laborers, iron workers, so on and so on, that they forego putting money on their check and rather put it in their welfare plan, which includes medical insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Now, those plans usually cover everything, and you pay nothing when you go receive medical care. But the Obama administration sort of labeled them as Cadillac plans, thus by wanting to put a tax on the procedures cost that you receive. That was wrong.
But the whole idea of government health care is wrong. Wrong that the Center for Medicaid, Medicare funding systems, you know, basically ran COVID. You know, the fact that they would pay $100,000 for the death of somebody and they wouldn't, you know, subsidize $15 of hydroxychloroquine to cure them. You know, I mean, the things that are wrong with government health care are just huge. But I don't like the idea of government health care at all. We're living in COVID. What everything that happened with COVID, from the masks to the lockdowns to everything else, to the lack of early treatments, to the remdesivir ventilator death march, all of that stuff was a government health care plan from Dr. Fascius and the other members of the health bureaucracy and the CDC and the NIH and the FDA. Went through the state, you know, from the governors to the mayors to the public health officials and everything else. There's government health care, and it killed almost a million people.
Well, yeah, I agree with you. But on the other hand, too, to pass mm-hmm. a health bill that has mm-hmm. certain things, like if you go to a tanning booth,
right.
women go to a tanning booth, I guess men do too, and you have to, in your bill is going to be an extra tax to go toward Obamacare. Yeah. That's wrong.
Yeah. Well, it's actually a white person's tax, because how many black people go to tanning booths? You know, you think about it.
I don't know. But I'm sure they wouldn't stop them if they wanted to go get in one of those things.
Yeah, but when you think of, you want to talk about discriminatory tax, I remember when one of the I think it was Anna Eshoo or one of the crazy women of California in the legislature was talking about, you know, discrimination, that women have to pay more for dry cleaning and more for haircuts, and that should be illegal. Well, women have more hairstyles and more work done than most guys, so yeah, I mean, that's a difference. But it's just funny that these things that they worry about for discrimination. But when you think about it, if you have a tanning tax, the people most likely to go for tans are the lightest skin people. So that's actually racist. What do you think about it?
Well, yeah, all those things come into play. The same mm-hmm. way with a Cadillac insurance tax. This is an insurance policy that you have paid for out of your own money. In other words, you forego putting mm-hmm. that money on your check and direct it toward your welfare, health and welfare plan. Now, when you go to the doctor, receive some medical treatment, when you go mm-hmm. get a tooth pull, that $300 if it costs to pull your tooth, then Obamacare wanted to tax that $300 where you would have to pay taxes toward them on it. That's wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know if you want to work on some kind of a health care bill or something like that. It'd be interesting to put you know, all the things that that you think are wrong into some kind of action. The other thing we should do, hey, you know what we're going to do? We haven't done this for a while, is I'm going to take a break and play Santa Rosa Volunteers' piece on the Sedition Act, because it seems to be a big thing right now. Once again, January 6th, you know, Political Prisoner Committee, the Insurrection Committee, you know, the committee to maintain the Brandon insurrection, are going after all kinds of folks right now. But let me pull your bill up. And let's take a look at it, and let's talk about federal and state ballots, and let's get that explained properly, because I don't think we've really done that justice. And this would be a good time to do it. So I'm disappointed our drag racers aren't here, because I really want to talk about $5 gasoline and the impact on just fun and in general. We can talk about that for a few minutes.
It's probably right now. Yeah, it's coming here.
Well, you just have to call in. It's just a cell phone. You know, I mean, I don't even know if they're racing, but I really wanted to get the racing community involved in the things we're doing, the Western state land, you know, the fact that the earth makes oil, the fact that carbon dioxide is a good thing. You know, I was hoping to bring all that in, and that $5 gas, there's no reason for $5 gas. It probably should be $1 gas. You know, if people realize that we've got plenty of oil, that you can open up the supply, that the earth makes more of it, and burning carbon dioxide is no big deal, you know, we get rid of all these government policies, all the climate change crap, all the stuff that they're spending the billions of dollars on, all the zoning for no family homes and the places are getting rid of cars. We get rid of all that crap, get cheap energy, and go drive and go have fun again. You know, and did I ever tell you about my creative car act? I wrote an act because cars were boring. So I said, let's get the government out of designing cars. Cars all look the same. Cars are boring. You know, what happened to colors? Where's the 57, you know, Chevy? Where's the 57 T-Bird? 57 was a great year. You know, where's the 61 Corvette?
Yeah, go to Cuba to find them.
Oh, they're all in Cuba? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, 59. I think 59 is when the revolution was, and so everything changed from there. All right, let me go look up your bill and give you a chance to talk about it. Give you a chance to look it up, too. Let me play the Sedition Act, 1798, and you'll see the parallels to today with the Marxist Brandon insurrection, basically trying to make anybody who says anything against the government make it a crime. That's what Sedition is. Anyway, back in a little bit, and we'll talk about Becky's bill. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. This week, I want to break from the Federalist and Anti-Federalist papers to consider one of the many aberrations in the early days of the land of the free. That is the Sedition Act of 1798. Granted, this is always grouped with the companion bills on aliens, but I see them as separate issues. Why would a new government, formed from colonies under rules of sedition from a foreign monarch, bring about that same tyranny into our government so early in its existence? The Constitution was ratified on September 17, 1787. The Bill of Rights was ratified on December 15, 1791. So it was already in the supreme law of the land that Congress could make no law that abridged the freedom of speech, thus making any subordinate law on sedition unconstitutional automatically. And yet, it happened. All power corrupts. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. Therefore, if you have a government of good laws and yet bad officials who crave the preservation of power more than the alleged guarantees of freedom, freedom takes second place. You can see that in evidence throughout the entire government response to a coronavirus that would have run its course naturally in about 10 weeks, just like the flu every year, and would have been gone by the summer of 2020 when all viruses fade until the winter. And yet, look at the massive amount of power taken from the people in a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. Sedition is defined in my online dictionary as conduct or speech inciting people to rebel against the authority of a state or monarch. So what did the government put into a law that so obviously came from the former ruler of the colonies into the new government of the United States? The Sedition Act is titled An Act for the Punishment of Certain Crimes Against the United States. In other words, conduct or speech that criticizes the government. Where have we heard that before? Section 1 of the Sedition Act reads, "Be it enacted by the Senate and House of Representatives of the United States of America, in Congress assembled, that if any persons shall unlawfully combine or conspire together with intent to oppose any measure or measures of the government of the United States, which are or shall be directed by proper authority, or to impede the operation of any law of the United States, or to intimidate or prevent any person holding a place or office in or under the government of the United States from undertaking, performing, or executing his trust or duty, and if any person or persons with intent as aforesaid shall counsel, advise, or attempt to procure any insurrection, riot, unlawful assembly, or combination, whether such conspiracy, threatening, counsel, advice, or attempt shall have the proposed effect or not, he or they shall be deemed guilty of a high misdemeanor." This, of course, violates the entire First Amendment, except with regard to religion. It gets worse. Section 2 says in part, "And be it further enacted, that if any person shall write, print, utter, or publish, or shall cause or procure to be written, printed, uttered, or published, or shall knowingly and willingly assist or aid in writing, printing, uttering, or publishing any false, scandalous, and malicious writing or writings against the government of the United States, or either House of the Congress of the United States, or of the President of the United States, with intent to defame the said government, or either House of the said Congress, or the said President, or to bring them, or either of them, into contempt or disrepute, or to excite against them, or either or any of them, the hatred of the good people of the United States. In other words, saying anything against the government of the United States or anyone in it is a crime punishable by jail and fines. This effectively creates political prisoners in the United States, much like the innocent people in the D.C. Gulag jail for being in the Capitol building January 6th. If that were not bad enough, within the Sedition Act is probably the most dangerous provision to individual liberty that I have yet seen in the founding documents, and provides a shocking precursor to the future neutralization of our jury system and the supremacy of the government courts over the people. Section 3. And be it further enacted and declared that if any person shall be prosecuted under this act for the writing or publishing any libel aforesaid, it shall be lawful for the defendant upon the trial of the cause to give an evidence in his defense, the truth of the matter contained in publication charged as a libel, and the jury who shall try the cause shall have a right to determine the law and the facts under the direction of the court, as in other cases. The key words here are under the direction of the court. The whole point of a jury is to not only determine the guilt of the defendant, the restitution in a civil case, but most important for the jury is to determine whether the laws implied are fair, just, constitutional, and are not arbitrary and capricious reservoirs of unlimited government power over the people. Jurors can do whatever they want because they are the representatives of the people over the judges who work for the government and therefore work for the people. And yet, as virtually every judge instructs their juries, that they can only judge the facts of the case and not the law. That lie is repeated every day in courts all across the country. And now I see where it came from. Section 3 is really saying that the juries, and therefore the people, are under the direction of the court. What the Sedition Act really does is makes criticism of the government a crime and allows government judges to direct the juries that would hear any case under this act, thus destroying the right of free speech and to redress grievances against the government and to due process and the right to a jury trial of one's peers. One could imagine anyone charged under this act would be guilty until proven innocent, and then ruined by government if they were proved innocent. Can you think of any parallels to the rights of free speech today? The Sedition Act was approved July 14, 1798, signed by John Adams, President of the United States. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. This is Greg Penglis for Strikeforce, your source for pure energy. Strikeforce is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. It contains caffeine, taurine, B vitamins, and potassium. You make your energy drink yourself. Here's how. Add one pack to a standard half-liter water bottle or 16-ounce glass to create a full-power energy drink. No sugar, no calories, no stirring, no shaking. Strikeforce energy drinks come in original, grape, lemon, and orange. Each flavor pack is a liquid that adds an explosion of flavor to any beverage. Here's the best part. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strikeforce, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL, to the discount code window at checkout. That's WYL. WYL comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, get a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strikeforce is at StrikeforceEnergy.com. That's StrikeforceEnergy.com. Start your engines. Action Radio. Part of the ADHD Radio Network. The ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio. And the Action Radio Citizen Legislature is now in session with our Citizen Legislature, Pianchi, who has written a bill, January 30th, 2021, Rules for Election Ballot Requirements, Requirements for Ballot Handlers and Counters for Federal Elections. Federal election ballot rules for voters, ballots, handlers, and counters. The 2020 presidential election has surfaced much evidence which raised many concerns with millions of United States citizens as to whether they did or did not participate in a free, let me move this over a little bit here, free, fair, transparent, and legal election when they cast their precious vote. We find there is need for this statute to be created to stipulate rules and guidelines to be followed to cast away any doubts on the concerns of future United States federal elections. Federal elections should have a different ballot than the rest of the state as in color and physical appearance. They, federal elections, should have their own peculiar rules and guidelines. If there is a line of people outside the polling place to vote at the cutoff time, a physical sign should be placed behind the last person in line, letting people arriving after the cutoff time to know voting is closed. If it is at all possible, herd people inside the polling place and lock the door, preventing any late arrivals from entering. Voter ID shall, for those seeking to participate in federal elections, possess a federal government vetted, pictured, numbered ID, such as the CardLogix biometric identity verification models, as that incorporated with U.S.-issued passports and pass cards. Voters' biometric information must appear on the ballot and its envelope for cross-checking. The ID should be labeled as good for U.S. federal elections only in the blank district and state of blank. The same biometric information should be on the envelope to match it to the enclosed ballot of a mail-in ballot. It must be taken to a post office where it will be verified and date stamped upon receipt. That's the first section. I'll get to the second section in a bit. Pianchi, you want to talk about your bill? Pretty cool stuff, huh?
Well, yeah, for those who can understand what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and it's simple. We have arguments going on even today about ballots in particular states that should have been settled, but they continue to go on and on and on.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no way that you can make a state move on this. So what should be done is just leave them alone. Have a federal ballot, which the Constitution allows Congress to do, that's separate from state and local issues. Now, if you've got the New York that's allowing illegals to vote on local and state issues, well, if you have a presidential election, well, that presidential candidate and federal candidates are going to appear on that same ballot that illegals have access to. Well, what's to prevent them from voting for the president, congressperson, and U.S. senator? There's nothing at all.
Well, the only provision, the only thing I was thinking of is that if the corrupt New York officials are giving ballots to illegal aliens anyway, what's to stop them from giving them a federal ballot as well as a state ballot or a local ballot?
It's the identification. You would have to have identification that's been approved by the federal government, similar to a U.S. passport, before you can get that ballot.
Okay. And that's what you're talking about with the biometric thing. See, I haven't read this for a while. This is my mistake. We've got here, let me see if I can just get an idea of what this biometric stuff is. CardLogix biometric identity verification. What's that?
Well, it's like you can either have fingerprints, and now they have technology that can look at the iris of your eyes because there's apparently patterns in that, a part of your body that's different from other people. So you can have the iris of your eyes scanned. You can have voice. But the fingerprints and the iris of your eyes is pretty good.
Yeah, see, I'm pretty good with fingerprints. I mean, I don't know if you want to do like retina scans, iris scans, things like that. I'm just wondering how much more information. When you do that, you're also giving away health information. Because I remember when I've been to eye doctors, they'll do a retinal scan. And they'll say, okay, yeah, your blood pressure's good, and this looks good. Or you got a little spot here. You probably got some when you were a kid, and, you know, all this other kind of stuff. And they're telling me all these things, you know, from my retina scan. I don't know if I want the government having that much information. I think with a fingerprint, I don't think that gives, you know, health statistical information that the government can use, whereas a retinal scan would. Or an iris scan. I remember reading about this a while back. There's some New Zealand doctor that was diagnosing all kinds of health ailments and genetic things based on iris scans. He actually had a way of diagnosing some computer program that would look at your iris and tell you, you know, you'd have cancer in 20 years, so things like that. I don't know how much there was.
Well, that's not what it's for.
Yeah.
That's not what it's for. Same thing with facial recognition, which they have today, but iris scans. A retina scan is just looking for a match. It's not getting any further than that. You know, you can look at a person's face in certain areas, and you can tell if they have a medical problem. But that's for people
for sure.
Who's trained to do that. So when you stand there in front of the machine, they do a quick scan of your eyes when you look in a certain direction. It just says, yes, this matches the identification on this card.
If there are provisions that are different for a state, as opposed to a federal, would people have two criteria that they'd have to go by? Or do you think the state would adopt the same biometric identity provisions as the federal ballot?
Well, states can do whatever they want to because they do whatever they want to. Some states say all you need to do is have a utility bill that you can pick out of a trash can. Some states say you just need to have a government ID, like a driver's license issued by that state. So the state's going to do whatever they want to. You have to, you know, I'm going to tell you something. Leave the states alone.
Yeah.
The states are never going to comply. Let's leave them alone.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's an interesting idea of having two ballots. I have no problem with this whatsoever. I just like to ask questions because I'm curious about things that I think other people might ask or be curious about as well. Let's go over some of the other provisions. There's actually two parts of this bill. This is like part two. All state, local, and federal restrictions to voting shall still apply. There should be a time limit for any mail-in ballot arriving at the collection station. Any ballot that was not dated within the time frame will be marked void, confiscated, and made available for fraud detection procedures. There shall be no voting over the internet for federal elections. Ballot counters and monitors shall consist of professional, bonded, sworn-to-oath persons who are non-residents of a district. Ballot counters shall not have any personal effects during their counting. This is to include cell phones, food or beverages, pencils, tablets, notebooks, ink pens, or marking instruments. For federal elections, no electronic digital machines tied to the internet by Ethernet, cable, or Wi-Fi connection shall be permitted. No foreign software will be used in any fashion to tabulate federal vote counts. Several of these professionals shall be deployed in counting one verifying the previous. They are to sign off on their tabulation for reporting a federal ballot vote count. No foreign apparatuses or machines will be deployed in the process. I'll take a break there, see if you want to comment part of that, and then we shall move on. It's not too much more. Did you want to comment, or shall I continue? He's thinking. I know he's there. He's there somewhere.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead and continue, because there's okay. A little more.
Just checking. Here we go. This process shall be under video surveillance from all angles and elevations. An audio, let me just move my screen over, but there we go. An audio recording device shall be placed at each counting station. Ballots shall be stored in a 24/7 hour video surveillance room under lock, and only designated people are permitted to entry and can handle boxes. When ballots are delivered, those who make these deliveries shall have undergone employment screening and vetting and possess a proper and the proper credentials at all times. They shall print and signature sign off on delivery and pickup. Personnel shall travel in pairs. Yeah, so basically these are your chain of custody issues. That's what you're covering here. Ballots should
well, you
be,
know what?
Go ahead.
You know what? Because of you, I want to change that. The count
okay.
should go on the very day of the election, and they should be it should be communicated whatever the count was on that same day. No ballot should be taken no place. So what it is, if you mm-hmm. come in, Greg, and you show identification to get a federal ballot,
mm-hmm.
you go to the booth and you do your selection on that ballot.
Mm-hmm.
When you're done, you take that ballot and you give it to the person there that's working that booth. Then that person takes it over and hands it to a table of at least three counters. Counter number one marks off president, vice president, what party. Marks off congressperson and marks off the U.S. senator. Then they give it to the next person to next to them. Okay, then you give it to a third person. Now, after every hour or so, those tallies are compared to make sure that the first person's got 25, the second person shouldn't have 23 or 27 or 28, and the third mm-hmm. person got 25. So what it is, those ballots that was cast within that hour are right there in a pile, and you can go see where the problem exists. Then once that's all straightened out, continue on with the voting.
You know, I agree with that. I was thinking of asking you about that, too. So I'm glad you brought it up. I think that's an excellent amendment to this bill. And for those that are listening and wondering, you know, how this process works, it's pretty straightforward. You go to writeyourlaws.com. That's our website for bill writing. Write your, WriteYourLaws. Writeyourlaws.com. You go to the legislation section and you click on the very first one, propose a new law. And under propose a new law, there's a space for your name. There's a place for your email. That's private. We don't publish your email. But unlike the state of Florida, we don't do that. But that allows me to get in contact with you if I think you got a really good bill and I want to have you on the show to work on it. So that's what email is for. Then you have your title of your bill, which we really like to have actually accurately reflect the bill. Don't have something called the Affordable Care Act, and then have it be Obamacare. So we actually like our titles to reflect what you're talking about. And then you put the content of your bill. And you can make it as specific or as general as you want. You don't have to have the section of federal law, the code, the state code, the local ordinance code. I mean, we can find that stuff out. But I put those in just because it makes it easier to reference the bills, especially submitting something to Congress. Once it's submitted to us, I'll decide, you know, pretty quickly whether it's worth putting on the website under Citizen Bill Ideas. That's so like our workshop. Citizen Bill Ideas is where every bill starts. And then when it's worked on, when it's amended, in fact, this one, I should put this up to all proposed laws. I looked for an all proposed laws. I'm surprised it wasn't there. It should. So I'm going to move this up. But Bianchi, what I want you to do is just as you talked about, make the amendments, write a comment at the bottom of the bill with all the changes you want, and then I'll change the bill, and then we'll move this up to all proposed laws. This should be something that should be sent out there now. And this is very common with bills. A lot of times we'll think about them for sometimes a year, sometimes more. You know, we consider things. And the reason everything's electronic is that when you send a bill link to a legislator, to you know, someone in the media, if you call a talk show, you send the bill link in, the top link to the bill. Every time they click on that bill, they get the latest version. So anything, any bills that Pianki sent to the legislators regarding his bill, okay, and anytime anybody else sent this bill to anybody, once it's corrected, the next time they click on it, they're going to get the updated version. So these are self-correcting, self-amending. This is why everything's electronic. This is why I don't put anything on paper, because this allows us to make these kinds of changes. The reason I like them in the comments is for the legislative record. So people can see where we were, they can see where we're going, they can see the comments, they can see the process by which we do this. So there's a lot of, fairly well thought out stuff here. So we're not just, winging it. We kind of know what we're doing, I think, at this point. And so Pianki can now go back. He can look at his bill. He can go, huh. And it's funny sometimes. This is why you should read bills to yourself. This is why I read bill over the air. Because you listen to it and you think, huh, I didn't know about that. That's interesting. What if I change it to this? And as we've talked about many times, one of the biggest problems with bills, first of all, with elections, is having ballots on the internet using voting machines. But the other is the transportation. And there's a move, we've kind of talked about it here. I've heard it from other folks, especially Wendy Rogers and folks out in Arizona. Count where cast. Your ballot is counted where it's cast. Ballots don't go anywhere. They stay in the precinct. Wherever you've cast that ballot, that's where it's counted. And the results are then transferred from there other places. The results are transferred, not the ballots themselves. So there's no ballot stuffing. There's no, as much as possible, we've eliminated all the chain of custody problems from mail-in boxes, which shouldn't exist, to post offices, which should never handle ballots ever, ever, ever. It goes right from the bonded people at the counting center, from the three things as Pianki outlined in those three counting stations. And then the votes are counted and that's it. Then the results are tabulated from there. The votes stay exactly, the ballots stay where they are in the precinct. That's where they should stay. And so in that way, I think we'd have a much better system. But yeah, work on Pianki, see what you think, try some different provisions. And again, I do the same thing. I read my bills out loud to me and go, I think I missed something. And that's how you're able to fix it. Okay, so let's go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, the comments that you made about ballots should be counted where they cast is an excellent idea. And just think of all the potential wrongdoings that could be happen on the transporting from one place to another. And also the cost. It would save on cost.
Well, that's true, too. Yeah, I mean, but the cost is not what they're worried about. They're trying to do everything possible to make this as corrupt a process as possible. So I don't know if I talk about video surveillance. Let me see. The process shall be under video surveillance from all angles and elevations. An audio recording device shall be placed at each counting station. Ballots shall be stored in 24/7 video surveillance room under law. I think I read that part. All right. So we've got that. Ballots should be tallied before placing in a box or container. The voter should be given a numbered receipt. Upon removing ballots, they should once again be tallied to make sure no illegal entry or removal of ballots. Before a ballot is counted, its voter identifier should be recorded and entered, checking for a previous entry match. People who are not U.S. citizens shall not be counted towards a U.S. Census count. We actually have a whole bill on that. Okay, so you can put this in there. It's not bad to say it twice, but we have an entire bill on the mandatory citizenship question on the census. In fact, that's one of the few bills that Congressman Gates took directly to, I believe, the White House and the Freedom Caucus. So we know that made it to Congress. I'm pretty sure it made it to the White House. And I'm pretty sure that the White House took a look and used that as kind of like a guideline for their executive order that they wrote on the census. And then it says this applies to all legal immigrants and illegal aliens in any household or dwelling shall not be counted towards proportionate representation for Congress, congressional seats in any state. I would actually make that a separate bill. I think if you put it in the voting bill, it's going to get complicated. It's going to get lost. You're putting different subjects in. And so if you wanted to have census vote bill. Yeah, go ahead. So I'm getting at.
Well, you're right. Illegal persons who are not a U.S. citizen should not be voting on federal elections whatsoever. So you're absolutely right. You know, when you're writing bills, a lot of things come to mind and they usually end up in the bill. But on the amendment, some of those things have to be trimmed out. For instance, if you report on, you do your report on the day that you cast, then that should be sufficient. Now, of course, those ballots have to be saved according to law for, what, 22 months, I think, after the election. So once you do the report, either by communication over phone or fax or however, I would have more than one method of reporting. I think that should suffice. It shouldn't be no worried about the transportation and so on and so on and so on.
Yeah, so take out any transportation. In fact, ban transportation of ballots. I mean, you can do that. See, ballots shall be counted where cast and shall not be taken anywhere. They shall be held at the precinct level, you know, and then if they want to secure them after a count has been verified, approved, audited, and everything else, you know, then if they want to move them to a central storage area, that's different. Once the counts are done, you know, and the audits have been done and everything else. But as far as counted where cast, and you might want to have a provision that they're counted on election day. That nobody shall leave the premises. No, there shall be no break in counting. There shall be no, you know, hiding observers. There shall be no procedural changes during the counting. You might want to say something like that, such that all counting shall be completed, you know, on election day. And if it goes past election day, it goes past midnight, then the count will continue until it's done. There shall be no break in the counting once counting commences on election day. And that would be a good provision in there as well. And this is the nice thing about podcasts. You can listen to the podcast of the show. You can go back and use the pink timeline at the top, and you'll be able to very easily kind of walk into the second hour of the show and go, oh, that's where we talked about, you know, talked about your bill. And you can sort of listen and go, okay, there's a good point. So all the points you made, the points I made, you can listen to those. This is what I do. This is how I, you know, I amend bills. I listen to podcasts when we talk about them, and that's how, and I use that to amend the bills. So that's all part of the process. Let me see if we got fines, levies, penalties, and punishments shall be levied against any person found who willfully violate these laws and rules, or anyone who assists a person in violating or circumventing these rules and laws through consultation or publications. Upon conviction, anyone found to have been in violation shall be a felony and face fines, penalties, asset forfeitures, and imprisonment. All legal means to collect will be pursued. Do you want to suspend the vote of people convicted of vote fraud?
Well, that would be up to the legislature.
Oh, no, it's up to you. You're writing the bill. If you were writing the bill.
Well, I have to think about that.
You don't have to know. I'm just saying.
It would be a felony. It would be a felony, and I guess the felony rules apply to disfranchisement. Mm-hmm. And how they regain their voting rights. So, you know, it could be looked at, yes.
Would you have registered vote offenders like registered sex offenders? I just thought of that. I don't know where that came from.
Well, that may, man, that's a good one. But, you know, here's the thing. If you can take the federal ballot and set the standard, okay, then the states would want to fall in line. They would say, well, why are we still counting votes 5 days after the election, whereas the federal votes have been counted and we know who's who?
Yeah, good question. One would think, well, this is where you're going to find out corrupt states and corrupt districts, and the corruption is going to move down to the state and local level. I think this is a good way to move it out of the federal level. If you had a federal standardized ballot, now the states still have control of the election. So this is, are these going to be, is this a state bill or is this going to go to Congress?
No,
just
the state
for the federal
doesn't
ballot?
Have control. The Constitution allows the federal government to control that federal ballot.
Right. But the states would still control the electors and all the other stuff regarding election procedures, but they wouldn't control the ballot. So you're limiting it strictly to the federal ballot and the counting.
The states
right?
can control the places where the election is going to be held, the polling places, and so right. on, so on, so on. But the procedures can be dictated by the federal government. It's their ballot.
Okay. This would be a good time for Chansey to call. I might see if she'll call in a bit early. I might play something for you for a couple minutes here and do a quick thing for her. But, that's a good bill. I think, take some time, write some new provisions, kind of go over the language, see what you think, anything that isn't as smooth as you'd like it to be. You know, read it out loud. That's usually the best way to do it. And then let's start talking about that and see if we can get it to some of our legislators, and let's see what happens. Okay, right back in just a little bit.
Yeah, set your kids on the
Joe
couch
Biden.
And read it.
Yeah. I started a sound thing. That's okay. I stopped it. What were you going to say? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I said, set the kids on the couch and read it to them and see how they sit through it. If they sit through it calmly, you got a good bill.
Yeah. Well, get your grandson. You know, he was on the show before. Read it to him. Well, let's bring him on the show and see what he thinks. That's actually a really good test because now that bill is not very long. It's maybe a page, maybe two. You know, it's straightforward. Especially when you take out the things that are not directly related to, you know, election procedures, like you talked about with the census and something else like that. Take a look at my census bill. It's actually pretty good. That's the one I wrote on the air. In fact, I'm going to play that probably Monday. I'll get that show out, edit it down, take out the commercials and news breaks from WBY. And I'll play you the bill, the very first bill written on the air, where we made broadcast history, and I was fired the following week. It's really kind of funny, but that's how it worked out. Anyway, all right, so it looks like Chancey's on the line right now, too, which is good. We'll get her a little bit early. Let me just play a couple of quick Biden things because I can, and we'll be right back.
Joe Biden's Dark Winter. No freedom, no liberty, no guns, no representation, no oil, no coal, no nuclear power. No Space Force, no Constitution, no family gatherings, no vacations, just taxes, work, misery, masks, lockdowns, and ever more government. This is what will happen if you let Marxists steal the election. This has been a public service announcement of Action Radio, reminding you it's time to get off your butt and save your country. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio. You've all heard those ads for people who have suffered medical or health tragedies, which say you may be entitled to compensation. But if you have suffered injuries or crippling diseases or medical procedures that went horribly wrong, it's not the compensation you need, it's the knowledge you should have had before the condition you suffer from now. So that you are never in that position in the future, I strongly recommend that you do not get any COVID vaccines. Get informed. Do your own research. For 99.97% of Americans, your natural immunity will give you, at worst, only moderate symptoms of COVID. If you've already had COVID, it's virtually impossible to get it again. There are effective cures for COVID, which will get you completely over the virus. There is no cure for the COVID-19 vaccines. Once you start down the road of DNA modification, there is no going back. What is health? What does it take to stay healthy? We have a longer lifespan than 100 years ago, but is the quality of life any better? 100 years ago, their food was better. They got more exercise. They weren't as fat. They didn't have preservatives, antidepressants, sugar in everything, and they didn't have vaccines. If you talk about alternative healthcare, people think of crystals, incense, strange candles, crystal balls, Ouija boards, notions, potions, lotions, and total hippies telling you to detox, man. So let's change our system of sick care into wellness. Let's get healthy. Let's lower our stress, stop taking in poisons, eat and drink organic, clean food, and let's have a chat with Chancey Terry, because this is Wine, Weed, and Wellness Wednesday.
I made you coffee.
Hello. Hello.
Yeah, it's a hot problem.
Hello. I am here. Are you there?
Oh, I forgot to unmute myself. I'm sorry. I'm so okay. I'm talking to you. And I was like, why isn't she answering me?
That's funny.
I forget to do this. Yeah.
Okay.
You're live. Okay, take two. Greg,
I'm alive. Take two.
We'll blame the producer. Yeah, producer screwed up. Of course, that's me. So
it's producer's fault. It is always the producer's fault. Always.
We had such a great lead-in, too. We had my Biden PSA. We did my COVID thing, and I had your nice little theme, and I forgot to unmute myself.
Yeah.
What was I thinking?
That's
okay.
Okay.
I'm
Hey, okay, people, fine. You know, they really don't want to hear you anyways. They just want to hear me. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, that makes sense. Okay.
Just
well,
kidding, Greg. I'm just kidding.
That's okay.
Just
no
kidding.
Problem at all. Let's give her a round of applause here anyway. Here we go. There we go.
Oh, I got you cookies.
Who are you whispering to?
I'm sorry. I was whispering to my husband.
Oh.
That's real life radio, isn't it?
Yeah, we can hear you. So, I know. Hey, husband, why don't you put him on the line at least, you know, this poor guy? Go ahead and talk to him. We'll wait.
He's precious. He's my chauffeur.
Oh, are you guys driving now?
Yeah. We carpool 2 days a week, try to, because of the drive. So.
I need to find a sound effect that goes, aww. Hey, Bianchi, why don't you join me?
You need that.
Bianchi,
you
one, two, that. Three. Aww. He missed his cue. That's okay. So,
oh,
get us
gosh.
Well. What's going on? What's happening in the health world?
Yeah, Lordy mercy. So, nothing much. Just all kinds of people, you know, getting sicker and sicker and coming to me
why?
For quick fixes.
Why? What's going on?
Yeah, I think it's...
What's making people sick?
Well, I think it's the shot. And the fact that they are around the people who are getting the shot. So, and the fact that now they are going back out into the world where germs have been forever and they have been away from them for a long time. So there is, even just without the virus, there's new germs that, you know, replicate every day. And so these people stay inside and then when they finally do get outside.
Yeah, I want to talk about that. This is actually a fascinating point. How much, you know, homebound, safer at home crap. I always knew that was a bunch of nonsense. That's why I never stayed home.
Mm-hmm.
But how long does it take? You know, they say that if you don't exercise within 72 hours, your muscles start deteriorating. That's why you need to exercise at least, you know, every third day, which is 72 hours. You really need to do physical activity, you know, at least every third day, better every other day, but at least every third day, because otherwise, you know, you're playing catch up. You got to get back or you'll never advance. In the same way, has there been studies of at what point your immune system starts degrading for lack of use? Is it a week?
Oh, I'm sure.
Six weeks? Has anybody looked into that as to how fast an unused immune system starts becoming weaker, just like an unused, you know, a body that doesn't exercise and lift weights and do aerobics and do all kinds of stuff like that? Because we know it's 72 hours. That's what my exercise people have told me, right? So is there any, do you have any knowledge of your immune system? You know, how long does it take before of not being exposed to all the bugs that are out there, they're replicating and changing and mutating every single day? How long does it take before people's immune system starts weakening for lack of use?
Yeah, I don't know. Then we could definitely look into it.
Okay, yeah. Next week. Right, make a note.
Yeah.
Greg's question for next week.
And I was looking into it right now just seeing, but I don't see anything that's super quick. But that is definitely a thing. I mean, look at the people in the nursing homes. That's why they slowly decline, and if anybody gets anything, it spreads like wildfire. So they just don't have the ability
to
do anything.
They have weakened immune systems anyway, just because they're older and weaker. I mean, we've got people that can't take care of themselves. That's why they're in a nursing home. So how much of that is going on? How much of can you stay stronger in your? I mean, obviously the answer is yes, but I mean, how much stronger can you stay? How much can you avoid nursing homes by simply exercising, taking better care of yourself, keeping your mind sharp, doing mental exercises? You know, I mean, crossword puzzles probably save more lives than you know, any number of drugs simply because you're thinking.
Yes.
You know, so how
crossword
the unused mind, the unused body. Could we help nursing home people by bringing in, I mean, are there exercise programs in nursing homes or are they just sitting there eating and sleeping? I mean, what do they do?
I don't know. You'd have to go visit the ones that care. Yeah, I mean, I could talk hours about nursing homes being horrible places, but somebody that works at one that loves their job may say otherwise, but.
Well, you're welcome to 215-383-3832. The last time, you know, every time I've been in one, I've had delivery jobs, you know, my impetuous youth, and every time I go to a nursing home, it smelled bad. So I'm not going to end up here.
Yeah, it's awful.
They stink.
It's really sad. how they
smell bad. They
act.
Smell like death. It's just, it's terrible. There's just depression everywhere.
Well, yeah.
And, you know, and I don't want to, you know, I want to be on a cruise ship. I'm going to be dancing and, you know, drinking and having fun and partying and invite all my friends. We're all going to retire together. So you're welcome too.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You know, we all hit our 80s. We're going to go, well, I'll get there before you. But, you know,
yeah.
Come find me on a cruise ship. I'll be there with, you know, 500 of my best friends, like my entire UMass marching band. We're all going to retire together. We're going to live on a cruise ship and we're going to party.
That's good. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't wait to go on a cruise and not have to be vaccinated. That would be nice. So
that would be nice, too.
Be able to spend my hard-working dollars on something that I want to spend it on. So that's another great problem right now. But no, I think that where we're headed is that it's summer and people are getting out and they really need to be able to get in the sun and do things that make them happy so that their inner vitamin D is boosted. So if you can get out in the sun as much as possible within the next few weeks or days or whatever, because it's getting warmer, that's just a natural way to boost your immune system without having to take anything, because people, I think, are just tired of taking things. I hear that's the other thing. It's like, well, what can I do without taking anything? Or what can I do physically that helps me versus going to the store and buying something? Because I don't trust that. I don't trust this. And that's the answer, is get outside. And if you're not going to get outside, then you got to figure out how to get what nature gives us. So we
strawberries, blueberries, onions, and garlic. Yeah, just go
right.
Blueberries,
so
onions,
your
garlic.
Diet.
You know, salmon, walnuts, and avocado, and you'll be fine. That's like my diet.
Yeah.
Well, here's a question though, with sun, because sun causes skin cancer. Sun is dangerous. Mm-hmm. Sunburns are bad. So at what point now can you get the benefits of sun without being in direct sunlight? Like if you're in the shade, but you're out in the fresh air,
absolutely.
Can you still get ultraviolet or not ultraviolet, but can you still get vitamin D without getting sunburned?
Yes, and I don't know the percentage of that, like under an umbrella or with a hat on, but you're either way, if you're looking at the sun and you're under the sun at some point, you're getting something beneficial from it. It's not as much as laying out, and that's the thing. People tell you the sun causes cancer when in reality the stuff that you put on your skin, that you bake into your skin, that causes the cancer. So it's the sunscreen, it's the synthetic chemicals that are on your skin from the detergent that you use. It's the lotion that you put on every day. And then the sun bakes it into your skin and turns it into cancer. So it's really hard to blame the sun for something, but they love to do it. So let's blame the sun for things that we can control and sell sunscreen for. But really, sunscreen causes more cancer than the sun. But I don't have the statistics on that, so I can't give you the article, point A,
no, that's
B,
okay,
and C,
but I'm curious.
But
literally, so let's explore this a little bit. So in other words, if you got just enough sun, like I'm very fair-skinned, I burn very easily, I can take a little bit of direct sun. But if I got, say, 10 minutes of sun, I might get just a slight rosiness to my skin. You know, but it's not going to be enough to severely burn or cause me problems. And the more I'm out in the sun, because I had a business when I was in college, you know, washing and waxing airplanes, as well as a landscaping business. I ran both things with a friend of mine. You know, we had the trunk full of airplane washing stuff, and we had this trailer full of lawnmowers. So we had two businesses we could do simultaneously. It was hysterical. Anyway, but I got a lot of sun that year, and my arms got darker, you know, and then my legs got darker. I was wearing shorts and T-shirts and stuff. But I never got sunburned. You know, because I built up the resistance, and I was never out when I was on the sun. I mean, I was never out that long. I was hiding under the airplanes, or, you know, I'd wear like long shirts and lawns and things. But I still got darker, you know, and it was never a burn situation. So I know I can do it. Even as fair skinned as I am, you can do it. And
there's health related issues to getting sunburned. So if you get sunburned easily, it's your liver doesn't have enough, and you're needing to provide your body with good fats. So when your body is full of good fats, it usually doesn't burn as easy. So there's this guy on Instagram. I tell people to follow him because it's easier for someone to be proven. But his name is Tim the Biohacker, and he shows you that. Like, and same thing with wearing sunglasses. The more you wear sunglasses, the more sensitive your eyes become to the sun. So that's another whole game ploy to get you to buy the $400 Maui gems that block every ray possible. And so then when you're out in the sun, you're not getting the natural light into your eyes. So you should be taking your sunglasses off when you're in the sun, and you can wear it, like wear them when you're driving if you need to a little bit, or wear them when the sun is like direct in your eyes. But the more you do not wear sunglasses, the easier it gets. Like, I make it a point now to hardly ever put my sunglasses on, which is sad because I have some really cute sunglasses.
No,
well, it's one of those
we are
things.
Slaves to fashion. So
yes,
now this is very interesting,
so,
because my regular glasses have UVA, UVB protection. So I'm not getting a lot of ultraviolet light through my regular glasses. And so I a lot of times I wear regular glasses in fairly bright weather. I mean, I like sunglasses. When I was a flight instructor, you better believe I wear sunglasses because it's bright
in the airplane.
There,
out there. Yes,
you know,
absolutely.
And it's the higher you get, the thinner the air gets, and you know, you get up 8-10,000 feet, and the air is a lot thinner than it is at sea level. You know, you don't notice it. Colorado people know this, you know, but too much UV is going to give you possibly cataracts and other problems, you know, in your eyes. So how much?
Mm-hmm.
So there's
well, and
other...
it's a combination of your diet and all the things. So like again, if you're full of good fats, then you absorb the UVA and UVB better. So then that's why it's that whole thing of balance. And we like to blame one thing for one thing. It's like the sun caused my cataract or, you know, and that it isn't ever just one thing. And so I just try to tell people, like, when you can, test it. Like, I have one girl that we're friends, and she's redheaded and blue-eyed, and she did a whole, like, few months on it, and she did the studies, and she did all the things. And she would, like, stare, you know, take her glasses off for 10 minutes a day because she had to wear sunglasses constantly because of her fair skin and like her blue eyes. It just was like a thing. So now she's got it built up to where she doesn't have to do that all the time. So it's training your eyes. And we've been, it's just like with any other programming, put sunscreen on, put your sunglasses on, put a hat on, get out in the sun. And that's so that you don't get the benefits of the sun because heaven forbid we're healthy. So
So even the fair-skinned folks, I should go out for maybe 10 or 15 minutes without my glasses on and just look at natural light and get some natural sunshine.
Walk around, and see how you adjust to it, like blink a little bit and just kind of look around, look at the trees, look at the ground. If it's super white and bright and it's like hurting your eyes, that's different. But if you can actually do, or like when you're driving, a lot of people put their sunglasses on when they're driving, maybe try to use your sun visor instead. And just see if you can, I mean, again, don't be dangerous to where you can't see the car coming. Wear your sunglasses. Use common sense, but which is lacking a lot lately. But if you feel the need to test it out, those are the good ways to test it out. Or like if you're at somebody's house and you're outside, just see. Just see how you can see.
Yeah, because when I was a kid, before I wore glasses, I didn't wear them until I was 19. I mean, I was out in the sun all the time. I was, you know, looking at the sunshine. I never wore sunglasses. I was out in brilliant sunshine, bike riding and swimming and doing all kinds of kid things. excuse me. There's another question I had for you on solar stuff. Well, the cars themselves, the windshields of the cars are UV filters. Isn't glass an ultraviolet filter anyway?
Yeah, so it's got filters to it, and they're doing so much more with tint and all that thing, so you should be okay, but there are people who wear them 24/7, and it's because they've weakened their eyes, but it was, that's what they, that was.
I wear my sunglasses at night. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, that's part of it. So true. People do. Wow. That's for another reason, I'm sure.
I was just singing. Don't
mind me. I know, it's funny.
Okay,
so that's the thing about the sun, and then there's so much going on, and I don't know where you want me to go with it, but and I know you don't care where I go with it, but
no, I don't.
I
just like to, you know, be creative. This is the thing too, for anybody that's thinking of being a reporter on the show, you know, my incredibly strict guiding principle is be interesting. I mean, that's it. That's it. Anything else is up to anybody that wants to come on and report stuff on the show. Just be interesting. That's all I ask. And you're interesting. That's why you're here. You know, so
well,
not a problem. So whatever. Yeah,
well,
I appreciate having you
so
on.
So going further into the light, because that was the thing that was really important, that there's full spectrum light, and then there's all kinds of other light. And we have, like, we've been working
explain
with this full spectrum light. I can't explain it. I'm sorry. I would love to, but I can't.
Can I explain it?
I will try to next time. Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Because I actually looked into this several years ago. Yeah. Now, what full spectrum light is it represents the sun as closely as possible in light frequencies. That's what full spectrum is. So you're talking about the rainbow. You're talking about the spectrum of light that's available to you in sunshine. Because what they found is that fluorescent bulbs and incandescent bulbs, but especially fluorescent bulbs, have very strong light frequencies. I think yellow particularly, and some green in there too. That's why your skin looks so horrible under fluorescent lights. But it's not a natural light. It's not representative of the frequencies of light that are available from the sun. And so what they tried to do was duplicate as closely as possible with these full spectrum bulbs, that they would radiate the light frequencies in the proportions that sunlight radiates them. Because it's natural, it's better for your behavior, it's better for your mood, it's better for everything. You feel better under sunshine, and in the same way you feel better as close as they can approximate it in a room, in an inside office environment, full spectrum lighting, as opposed to the fluorescent yellow, green, dominant, whatever the colors dominate. I'll look that up too. Under typical fluorescent bulbs, but they're giving the wrong frequencies. They're not giving you enough of some, and they're giving you too much of others. And it makes people upset. It creates a bad mood. That's why offices are, you know, places of gossip and stupid things happening in Dilberts and everything else, because they got the wrong lighting. They don't have fresh air. They got the wrong lighting. They've got electronic machines upsetting, you know, your electrical balance with too many positive ions. And you need to get the negative ones. That's why people go out to water fountains at lunch, because water fountains have negative ions. They change the balance in your brain. You feel better. That's why you feel better at the beach. Moving air creates negative ions, which is good for you. So all these different things you can do. You're almost like duplicating the natural environment inside as closely as possible. And full spectrum lighting is a pretty big part of that. How'd I do?
Thank you. Spot on. That's the thing. Those are the things. Those are the things that are in my brain that I could care less to explain to someone. So I'm glad that you know how to do it. So the fact
there'll be something else.
Yeah,
Yes,
I'm appreciative of it. So it's basically like reading an article that I've read a million times, and that's good that you have that capability of bringing out in an educative way.
Weird brain. Well, here's the thing, too. Now, how come I got this ridiculous brain that retains all these, you know, factoids from the time I was born? You know, I'll come up with stuff, and I don't even know where it comes from. You know, is that a nutrition, an education, a brain exercise thing? I mean, I can play Jeopardy today, you know, and I've been watching TV shows since I was like 8 years old with Art Fleming, and they actually had cards. That's how far back it goes. And I can still get a pretty good amount of those questions. So are there certain brains that just absorb more information? Because mine's like, you know, you don't want to be in my head. My brain is a strange place to operate. Trust me, it's weird enough
well,
for me.
Well, no, it's the same thing. Yeah, I think it just depends on your environment. So you've been around a lot of people, a lot of places, so you're bound to absorb those things, and then it just depends on if you use them, and you did because you talk, show, you know, like you have to recall them often, so they're going to be – you have to recall a lot of things often, so your brain is usually probably just firing at a different pace, whereas, like, some people – can remember when they were 4 years old, they went to the zoo and they petted an elephant, and that might have just stood out for them. You know, our brains are intricate, amazing wildness, and that's a whole, and I guess we could talk about the brain and mind anytime you want to, but I'm not a brain scientist or anything like that, but the brain and mind are completely two opposite things, and we like to lump them together and say that one controls the other, or they're the same, and that one doesn't control the other, but the mind controls the brain. So there's a whole thing on that, and then the gut-brain axis. So, of course, like what you put in, it comes out, and I don't know. But, yes, different brains do different things, and it's from what you put in, on, and around you. And, of course, genetics play a role, so how your parents were and how – what you learned in school and how you were taught, and a lot of people are not being taught the same now, so people can't recall anything because they're not teaching them recall mechanisms in school. But I'm not a parent, and I don't have kids, so I don't know how that is right now, but they're really just, you know, teaching them enough to get by in some cases.
Well, here's a question. Yeah, I've sort of been sort of forming this theory that kids today have access to so much information instantly. I mean, they don't have to go to the library. Yeah. They don't have to use the Dewey Decimal System. They don't have to look up cards. They don't have to write down, you know, a five-number code. They don't have to search for their book, you know, on the shelves. They don't have to do what would take several hours worth to find the answer to your question. It's right there on your phone.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's right there on
their phone.
And
that's where it's at. Mm-hmm.
Are people losing their ability to use their brain as a computer because they're not storing information in their head like we used to, because we didn't want to go to the library, you know? I like having my World Book Encyclopedia at home so I could look stuff up. But the question is there a lack of brain exercise in our younger generation because they can look anything up, that they don't think about stuff in the same way? And that's why they're appearing more stupid, because it's not that their brains are any worse starting off. They're actually, you know, hopefully better developed just because, you know, they're the next generation, but they're not using them. They're not.
No.
And they're not thinking to use them.
Because they're being taught they don't have to. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Well, they don't have to use their brains because they can Google it. Literally, they're being, you know, they can just look it up. And so they don't have to, like you just said, they don't have to know it. And then if they forget it, they can look it up again. And then it may be different the next time they look it up, but they won't remember because they looked it up. And it's just like us, if we read a book a bunch of times and then somebody told us something was in a book, we could be like, well, no, that's not. Look, it's right here. That's not what that says. Well, now everything's digital. So they can go in, rewrite it, take words out, that's what they want. They want you to be dependent on the technology so that it can be redone at any time, and then there's no proof. So the books aren't there. There's nothing there. It's just what they want you to see. And have you been around like a 5 or a 7-year-old? They are talking nonstop, and it's because their brain is ping, 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 ping. Different windows are opening up every 5 seconds. And, yes, that's a kid, but it's what, to me, just in my life experience, it's way worse now. It's like they can't stop. It's like you tell them 15, even a good kid, you tell them 5 or 10 times to not interrupt or not talk. And depending on their environment and depending on their lifestyle, they are nonstop. They just, it's like they physically can't. And then when they do get made to stop, it upsets them. And I think it is, I think I see it happening, that it's a brain thing. It's not that they're trying to be a bad kid. It's literally their brain is going 24/7, TikTok, Instagram, Snapchat. They have all that for kids now. And so they're inside their head, they're seeing all these things. They're seeing, you know, animated characters, and they're seeing these music videos, and then they're seeing this, and they want to talk about it. They want to tell you about it. Whereas we didn't see that much stuff. Like when I was a kid, I didn't even know, you know, I didn't scroll through my phone. If I wanted to get on the computer, I had to get on the computer and like look at a few things and get off. So my brain had time to rest, and I see it happening. It's ADD, ADHD. It's wearing them out, and they're staying up way too late because they can. So, but that's all the, we can go into how the parents allow that. But sometimes I think it's because they're just wore out. I think the kid doesn't know how to stop, and the mom's just like, or the dad is just like, here's a tablet. My gosh, you know, go do something. And then it gets them off their back, which is sad. But I think it's because it's like times 10 now. That's just my opinion. But it's a crazy thing to watch.
Yeah, it's like there's no off switch. It's like, you know,
there's
their brains.
There's no
they
off
can't.
Yes.
They, and if they're not connected to some technology like a Borg, that they're not, there's something, it's like they're missing a part of their life. You know, they can't just, you know, I used to bike ride a lot in the Bay Area. It's a beautiful trail by San Francisco Bay. You know, the pelicans would be diving and, you know, catching the herring, and, you know, you see occasional snakes, and hawks would be overflying the marshland. It was a beautiful place to ride. I never brought a headset or an eye something or an earbud. I never had any electronic device. It was the one time I got completely away from electronic devices of any kind. And I had, you know, long debates with myself and thought things through, and it was like meditation.
Yeah.
That's why I created Action Radio with bike rides. But there was no external anything. There was no music. There was no, I mean, I sang to myself, but my own brain would create enough you know, activity. But I don't know if kids can do that now. Can they go for a bike ride and not be connected to something?
I know it's hard. And I think that's what we need to try to figure out for the next generation. Cause it's going to be a thing to where they literally can't they can't do anything without having something in their hand, but that's the plan. And so if they upgrade, just like, I mean, it's this, the whole get the booster, it's get the new phone, get the new tablet, get your kid the new device to play games on, get them the, you know, AirPods and this and that, and it's ruining them. And you can't tell a parent that wants to treat their kid to these nice things that, because then you're the bad guy. So So there needs to be some sort of education that shows them what it's doing to their kid's brain. It may make them a little bit smarter. Like I've talked to some kids and they can say grown-up words at 6 and 7, you know, like they can carry on a conversation with an adult. And that's what the internet has done. It's because they're listening to things that they probably shouldn't, you know, and it makes it cute, you know. It makes it like a cute little conversation where they can say things that are like, oh, my God, I can't believe she just said that. But it's because it's on the internet, and usually they wouldn't have heard that for years. And so, I mean, you get into whole the, you know, promiscuity and just drugs and alcohol. It's early now, so early, and it's causing so much damage. And so then you add a pandemic, sticking them in the house, and they've got to do schooling inside. Let's give them, you know, fruit juice and Pop-Tarts, and let's let them eat all day instead of, even though the lunchroom food is terrible, you know, they're snacking, they're eating red dye number 5, they're just doing all, their brains are just overloaded.
They're getting fat. They're getting fat. They're not doing gym. They're not doing gym. How many homeschool parents, you know, send their kids out for a bike ride in the middle of the day or make them go out and walk 6 times?
I hope it's more than I know, like, you know, but still it's, and again, the dangers of the world. Everybody talks about, you know, don't go here, don't go there. You can't ride the neighborhood. So and so, you know,
bike ride with
because
your kids.
We like that. We like, yeah, I know. And then,
you know. Mm-hmm. My daughter, when she was growing up, we were always doing. Yeah, we always did physical stuff. Archery was a big – we loved archery. We had this big hillside that was full of these trails, and it was behind the Chabot Observatory in the East Bay of Oakland, if anybody wants to, you know, look it up. And they had these great – and they had, like, space alien targets and animal targets, and we felt like Robin Hood. It was very physically active. Or we're running around the beach, and we're leaping off beach dunes, or we're running over Fisherman's Wharf. We had a great time, you know, and but we were always physically active. And so it made a big difference. I had kind of a funny thought. You know, are kids on dates, are teenagers on dates, are they like making out with their earbuds on, listening to different music?
I can definitely see that.
Mm-hmm. I don't know where that came from. It just amuses me. That, I mean, our kids so bad off now, they can't talk to each other, you know, when they're in the backseat of whatever. I don't know what kids are doing these days, but yeah.
And then you've got these adolescents that are 17 and under, you know, almost that graduating age, and they're full of hormones that have never been even invented. Like, they're natural hormones. I don't even think there's natural hormones anymore. So they're obsessed with boys. They're obsessed with looking the best. They're obsessed with this. They're obsessed with that. And when it doesn't happen, their life is destroyed. Like, they can't even, but again, the brain can't switch off. So it's all or nothing. If this boy doesn't like me, it's terrible. And I know that's been a thing, like, you like a boy and you hope they like you, or you like a girl and you hope they like you. But now it's like, if it's not on Instagram or if it's not on Snapchat or if that's not your profile page or you don't have these, it's really bad because it's constant. And we've talked that people talk about that with bullying now. That's why the suicide rate in children is so high, is because it can continue when you go home. Used to, it was you got bullied at school and you didn't have to see them until you went back to school. But now you can get a notification at 2:00 in the morning that somebody wrote on your Instagram that you're ugly. So then you wake up to that, and it's you're connected 24/7.
That's crazy. Yeah. You know, I think, as a parent, you know, and like I say, my kid had a phone, but that's because, you know, I was a weekend dad. So it was necessary to have a phone to talk to, you know, stuff during the week.
Yeah.
But, and for the most part, we didn't talk a lot during the week, but she still had a phone. She could always, you know, get in touch with me when she had to. But it wasn't, she didn't live on her phone. We did stuff. You know, we were always active. And I did a kind of an interesting thing, I thought. Over the course of several years, we did a tour through all the Hollywood movies, starting with the 1940s, you know, Singing in the Rain, you know, and things like that. Mm-hmm. Really good movies, good stories, classic movies. Then we did the film noir and the Hitchcock films. And we went through all the decades. So after several years, you know, but these were the education ones, the big ones, the meaningful ones, Spartacus, you know, Serpico, you know, different. And as she got older, we got the more modern, you know, more sophisticated, more adult, you know, kind of, you know, fascinating films. But that was media. But we talked about stuff. We talked about the messages and the morals and the values.
Well, they were real movies. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They were real movies. Now, to you, this is
Yeah, they had real stories, real storylines.
Yeah. So here's a question too. The special effects, you know, with movies, you know, you got your Pixar's,
yeah.
You've got your all your graphics and movies. You know, you look at a film like Casablanca. You know, this is something my daughter loves that film. We all, you know, it's who doesn't love Casablanca, right? It's black and white. Okay. It's about an hour and 20 minutes, maybe. It's one of the greatest films ever made. It's got these classic actors who everybody knows, you know, Humphrey Bogart, Ingrid Bergman, Claude Rains. I think it's about it. Sydney Greenstreet, and Sam. I've forgotten who played Sam. But anyway, but it was a classic. And there was no special effects, you know, maybe the cap guns, because they did have some, there was a couple of shootings in it. But other than that, there was nothing other than just the people. And, you know, and you could relate to all these folks on a personal level. You know, stuck in Casablanca. And it's all fake. We found out later it was a fake story. There was no waiting in Casablanca. There were no papers. You know, there was no escape visas. It was just a made-up movie. But that wasn't the point. It was a great story. But do they have great stories for kids? Do kids engage in great stories? You know, from...
Well, yeah, but they're so animated that you can't keep up. So they're so out there. Like, I don't watch TV hardly ever. I don't even know what shows are on right now. But there's a movie that I think you've seen it. It's something red, Riding Red, or it's a movie. It's teaching kids to sneak out of the house. And it's teaching kids to, yes, it's teaching kids to sneak out of the house and to not listen to their parents and that their parents are stupid. And it's funny because my little niece watched it. And she's the one, she knows better than any. So she's like, yeah, I'm 7. I don't sneak out of the house. Like, she knows better, but there's kids that don't. So there's other kids that are watching it and they're like telling their mom, they're yelling at their mom, all the things. And then in the movie, it talks about they're all girls and they're going to go to a concert and they're going to give the boys rides and then they're going to leave women when they leave. And this isn't a children's movie. And so there's just like little things
leave
that they're
women.
Gonna,
they're gonna have sex.
Leave
at the
women. We're gonna leave. Well, that's not what it says, but that's exactly what it makes you insinuate. So and they're giving the boys rides home, and they're like, oh, these boys are so, you know, like this stuff that's bringing it into the household that does not even need to do it. And it's Disney, and that's why they keep putting everything on Disney. Go to Disney Plus, put it on Disney, get it on Disney, so that you say, oh yeah, just turn on Disney and watch something. And everything's on there. So the kid is watching stuff that it doesn't need to be watching, but you think you did your job because you just let them watch Disney. So they know what they're doing, and there's nothing we can do about it. But basically, or that part of it, there's you just got to educate, and you got to watch. This comes back. We've had this conversation 3 times. If you chose to have a kid or a kid was chosen to be given to you by accident or whatever, you need to be a parent. And if you don't want to be a parent, you need to find somebody else that can, because our kids are our next. That's where the screw up is happening, and I hate to say it, but it's a bad deal. They're not being taught enough, they're not being watched enough, and they're letting be little brats, they're letting have attitudes, and it's all because of laziness. And that's the only thing too. It's laziness and ignorance, where people don't want to take the time to figure out why. They want to put them on a pill, or they want to put them in a special class, when really it's their diet, it's their environment, and it's what you're putting on their physical body. If you're putting deodorant on your 7-year-old that has aluminum in it, there's no words. But you don't know any better until you know better. So people need to, everything that you buy, you need to look up the ingredients to. And unfortunately, we have to do that now, because they are trying to ruin our society. They're trying to make everybody dependent on a pill, and you can't tell me any different. Some kind of pill. From birth to death, they want you on a pill. And so that's your battle every day, is to stay away from that. Not that medicine doesn't have its place, but it
well,
has
it does,
a need. It's not as a, it's not as a,
well, I'm trying
like
to figure where
keeping you alive.
Yeah, yeah. Pianki's going to join us too. Pianki's still alive in the line. So what is it with Disney? Is this part of the leftist psychobabble? Are they trying to destroy families, make kids, you know, purposely rebellious to reject all authority except Disney and the school teachers? Is this a teacher union kind of thing? Are these groups acting independently for the same goal, or are they actually coordinating this? What is this destruction of kids having any kind of discipline or morals or responsibility for themselves or anything else, that they think they can do anything, say anything, that they are their own little world. They are their own little God, and everything they say is meaningful. You know, it reminds me of Greta Thunberg, the spoiled little 16-year-old snotty-nosed kid that thinks she knows everything about the climate. You know, it's just like, shut the hell up.
Oh,
go away.
Yeah.
You're a 16-year-old kid.
Yeah. Well,
you
no,
know, you can express your
words.
Opinion, but, you know, go get a job. Yeah, and tell me, you know, tell me after you've worked and, you know, you've done something productive with your life rather than telling everybody else how to live. Yeah. Kathy?
Yeah,
what you
words.
Have.
Go ahead,
yeah, what you have is a continuing effort to destroy the fabric of America, the United States. And what's more a part of that fabric than the family?
Yes. And sex trafficking. So Disney is the biggest, like, again, this is conspiracy 101 that you'd have to look up. But that's what they want. They want kids to rebel so much that, like, if someone offers them something, they go sexual. Like, they want them having sex at 8, 9, 10. They want them loving. That is the sickness that they are trying to put on the younger generation all the time. And I don't know how to prove it, but that if they can get them that way, if they can get them interested in the body, then there you have it. And so they'll do whatever, whenever, and then it leads to the other, and then they lead to them taking pills or something because they did something that they wish they wouldn't have. Now they've got to live with it, so their mind is messed up. And instead of teaching them about how to heal, they teach them how to cover it up so that they don't feel. It's always about sex, drugs, and alcohol. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Sex, drugs,
yeah,
and rock
no,
and roll. But,
it's interesting
yeah,
to
it
say
is.
That,
it
though,
really
because...
is.
These kids are programmed so much, and it's like they break down the family. Families are bad. Teachers are good. You know, listen to us. Don't listen to your parents. Here's an 800 number. If your parent, you know, tries to discipline you, you know, call social services. They'll take care of your parents. You know, and it's like, I mean, Nazi Germany did this. Communist China did this. You know, Cuba does this. They turn the kids against the parents. That's a well-known totalitarian tactic. But in this country, it's worse because they're breaking down everything. You know, sex as early as possible. This is what that bill in Florida is all about. You know, they call it the Don't Say Gay, but really one of the worst names for something. It's not even close to what it does. It's like calling Obamacare the Affordable Care Act. It's completely misnaming a bill that's trying to protect kids from having their gender questioned at 5 years old.
Gosh.
Are you really a boy? Are you really
a
girl? Don't you want to be a girl if you're a boy? Don't you want to be a boy if you're a girl? This to me is one of the worst child abuses. And yet these same people that are supposed to protect kids from child abuse, you know, teachers, child protective services, things like that. They're some of the worst abusers out there. And this idea, and I had a discussion on Facebook with some people. It's like, well, we can't have this bill. You know, one comment, this goes against everything I learned, you know, for my teaching credential. I'm thinking, what the hell did you learn for your teaching credential? You know, if this is if this is okay to take over the role of parents and discuss things that parents might never want their kids discussing, the idea that you can change your gender, the idea that it's okay for boys to compete in girls' sports, it's okay, you know, the old idea of having a separate bathroom, you know, for men and women,
all
boys and girls,
inclusive.
You know, and all that stuff gets
we
turned away.
Everybody.
That's crazy. That's insane.
It is. But it's because, and again, it goes back to the science of things, the things that we're injecting into these children at such a young age are causing that. They're causing little boys to act like girls, to have manly part, like manly looking bodies, because we are altering their DNA. So now, instead of saying that that's what we did, we've got to create programs to accept it, because it's not. It's just how they are. No, we did it. You did it. You allowed it, and it's been done. Mm-hmm. So that's where we're at. It's like we are constantly creating programs to accept the failures of Big Pharma, the sexual changes and all of that. I will go to my grave saying that vaccines have caused all of that. Homosexuality, young and children, children acting different, children looking different. It is from altering their DNA. And that's because God made them one way, and then you put something else in them. And then, of course, it's going to change them. They're going to, you know, act feminine, or you don't know. Where did the DNA come from? Was it a female chicken or a male chicken? Was it a frog? So you can't, but you're screwing with God's creation, and that's when it just, nothing seems right. And that's why the whole world, nothing seems right, because we're screwing with what he makes. The simplicity of it is that we're messing it up. It was made to work one way, and we're making it another.
If you want to explore that more, I got Jeanette on the line too. We're going to get into our rental trap. I haven't made a line. I mean, make a line in life now. But
perfect.
The thing is that this is something I want to explore in future shows. And if you can trace various vaccinations and various chemicals to chemical changes, DNA changes, things like that in kids, we need to kind of expose that. You know, part of wellness is what not to do to your body.
Yeah.
So listen, welcome Jeanette to the conversation. Jeanette Reynolds, we're with Chance and Terry. And, Chance, do you want to give your contacts up just to make sure we get that in?
Real quick. So thank you. It's ChanceyTerry.com, Chance with two E's, T-E-R-R-Y.com, and everything is on there. I have a location in Pace, and I have a location in Gulf Breeze. And I appreciate all of the support. Y'all are awesome.
Well, thank you. And you can stick around if you want, if you have to go. But
thank you, as always,
we have a lot of projects for next week. You know, I every time you come on, I have like 6 more weeks of worth of investigation.
I know.
That's okay.
I need to start making a journal. Yes.
Listen to the podcast.
Well, y'all have a wonderful morning. Yes, I will. Y'all have a great day.
Thanks, y'all.
Jesse. Bye, Bianchi. Take care. Bye.
There we go. All right, Chance and Terry.
Goodbye. Be careful.
Yep. She'll have to listen to the podcast. Jeanette, what's going on? What's in the world of Reynolds Wrap?
Good morning. Good morning, Florida. Can you hear me?
Oh yeah, you're just fine. Yeah, you're on. Yeah.
Oh, but, very good. You didn't respond. You just went quiet when I said good morning.
No, I was just thinking because we got a lot more than Florida. You know, hopefully we actually have Azerbaijan, you know, listeners. We have listeners in Iran and Afghanistan. We have listeners in Vietnam and in Argentina. We have listeners all over the place. It's really kind of fun.
That's great. So,
what's
going
on?
Good morning to Chancey Terry. Chancey's gone. Now I was listening to a little bit of her report. Yeah, just when everyone wants to kind of give up and be sad by the turn of events and everything that's been going on the last 2 years, it's interesting. I had a really revelatory conversation with a 34-year-old. And for the 34-year-olds and younger listening out there, you know, It was fascinating because I do believe there's still common sense in the world, and it does cross the generations. I know, you know, I'm a studier of demographics, and part of what I do in the world of comms, strategic comms, risk communications, whatnot. You know, you have to study groups and age groups and how they react to certain news media and et cetera. But, you know, there is a common sense thread, and I do believe it's on the rise again because we in America have suffered so much in the last 2 years. Now, that is with the COVID, the lockdowns, the changing government, all this crazy stuff that's going on. And then, of course, now we've got, you know, wars and rumors of wars in Europe and globally, and some of them aren't rumors. It's just it's happening right before our very eyes. But it's fascinating that, you know, the human common sense is still out there. And I think a lot of us can feel like it's long gone, because if you look at Facebook or if you look at all the social media, Twitter, Insta, all the others, Rumble, even the new platforms that are out there, one can get wrapped around the axle and think that, wow, the world is just caving in and it's never, ever going to get better again. And I was just in a conversation yesterday where I felt like, no, there is hope. We can hold on for a better outcome because common sense will prevail. There'll always be that faction of people that, you know, are just off the hinge, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then there's common sense people like you and I and others around the world and in this country, they're like, no, we're not going to bash America. We love America. And there is an American culture. And there are reasons why countries have borders. These are all good things. These are normal things. And common sense will prevail. I really have hope. Just wanted to share that.
No, it makes perfect sense. I was just thinking about some of the shows I've done. I was sort of like marking the stages of COVID, COVID resistance, you know. And the first of all was compliance. You know, people wore masks. They shut their businesses down. They didn't object, except for a few of us that were screaming and yelling, you know, making videos and doing shows and screaming, you know, at the top of our lungs, this is not real. This is not, you know, yeah, the virus is real, but the government reaction to it is a massive hoax. And they are basically killing people by denying early treatment. I'm not going to tell the whole story, but people know what's going on. But gradually, more and more folks, you know, started waking up and going, you know what, I'm going to stay open. And then I put the various phases. The first phase was from compliance to resistance. And so that to me happened. It was a Trump rally in Iowa. This is about probably 6-8 months ago. Whenever the first people started saying, I'm not going to take the jab to keep my job. I'm not going to do that. That was a huge mark in our society in terms of people actually, you know, common sense and exercising judgment at a cost. It was a cost to them to lose their job. And then I found another phase was I called it, you know, vindication. The liars are having to face their lies. And that was when you had like Rand Paul, you know, going after Dr. Fascist, you know, and doing all kinds of other things. And people were starting to challenge the orthodoxy. It was like, well, we don't think this is true. We don't believe the things the CDC is saying. We don't believe that these vaccines are doing anything other than, you know, especially like what Chancey was saying. And now we're in kind of a different phase. I don't know what you'd call this, but we're sort of, you know, maybe it's the return of common sense, where people start to trust their own judgment again, as opposed to the government giving them their own judgment. So and that might be the biggest thing now. What do you think? I'm curious.
That's precisely what I said. So I always feel like, and I'm just gonna put this out. I'm gonna impart this in a way that I think most listeners can agree with. That a lot of times the answer to whatever it is we're facing comes to us in a very gentle, sort of unassuming way, but we're not really even looking for it. We aren't even really looking for it, but all of a sudden we get this light bulb above our head that says, wow, this literally like rings true. This is right. This is correct. Now, it may not be a movement. I mean, you know, the thing is, you know, there's rallies and there's social media and there's all this stuff. That's almost like the after effect of a single thought from a single human being that says, you know what, this doesn't make sense. And common sense is going to rule out, and here's why. Because I've been sitting here holed up in my apartment or home under a COVID lockdown for a year and a half or whatever the situation, and I've had time to think. You know, as you said, they go through the cycles. They go through the cycle of being scared, perhaps. They go through the cycle of pushback. They go through the cycle of attending a rally and getting a little stronger. Then they go through the cycle of, wait a minute, Wait. I kind of lost my mind for a year and a half, you know, because you get caught up in the cycle. And you're trying to sort it out. And it's like, okay, voila, we're back to, I think, a wave of people, a population that's going to go, wait, no, I was right. This doesn't make sense. But this does make sense. And, you know, I'm not going to throw my country under a trash heap and renounce it and call it bad names. I am going to be proud to be an American, and I am going to stand up for the things that are right. And and that revelation will come to you through just one single conversation. But that's enough. It's a spark to fire a whole group think or a whole group of people. And when I say group think, I'm not talking about, you know, the iCloud of group think craziness. I'm talking about a wave of enthusiasm to come back to center again, not center politically, just center your thoughts and your well-being, and know, wait, common sense does rule. And no, we're not going to like throw this country out the window. That's ridiculous. And we know what's right for our kids, and we know what's right for our health. You know, like we're not.
But people acting on it, you know, the people know what's right, but the question is, they have the courage to act on it. I've got Kyle out in California. I'm going to bring him on just a minute here to talk to you. But I just have one question first before I do that. Is there any measure of what how many people or what percentage of the population, you know, I guess is like the 100th monkey thing. If 1 in 100 people believe something, then you can change the thoughts of the whole nation. How many or what percentage does it take, or how would you judge at what point there's enough of a critical mass out there that says this is wrong, this doesn't make sense, we're not going to do this anymore? I know it's beyond what was during the lockdowns, but and now we've got way more than enough. But where do you see the line? Where's the line crossed? How much? How many? What actions? How do you judge when people are making that change into their common sense and they're getting their judgment back?
Right. Good question. So the answer is this: I believe that percentage of people, that demographic group, that if you want to dig deep into the weeds of analytics, those people already exist. They just need to be given voice. And we know in media, we just know in media that it's being squashed, right? And they're being censored still. What did I see yesterday up here in D.C.? I saw, trying to think who it was. It was something so simplistic, but then, you know, again, they squashed it. And it was like, it was so incredibly ridiculous. Like, what? So yeah, like the common sense, you know, person with good faculty and you know, knowing and understanding the way things, you know, should be coming back to normal, they're there. They're just, it's almost like they've been pushed down in the mud, you know, like they're being squashed. And it's like, that's okay. It's good. You can't keep that voice quiet. It will create new platforms. It will expand exponentially as people just start getting stronger, and then it feeds on one another, right? We get, yeah, you know, people get stronger by hanging out with like-minded people. Now,
look at the truckers. Truckers probably the best example of that right now. Yeah.
I think the truckers were so inspiring to so many people in so many ways. I think even people on the moderate and left side, they were like, wow, that's pretty amazing. Seriously, there's no human on earth that can look at that big convoy of people and go, that was a big nothing burger. It wasn't. Mm-hmm. It was really inspiring, you know.
Well, they're still there.
Yeah.
That's the other thing. They're still working. They're still doing interviews. I saw a thing with Brian Brasse and Jim Jordan. Jim Jordan? Ohio. Yeah, Jim Jordan. And they had a great video.
Yeah, Jim Jordan. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. So there's still meaning. I'm still trying to reach them, too, with a couple of bills, particularly the Section 230 big tech, you know, censorship elimination and full vaccine product liability. So we'll see if I can reach Brian. I'm trying to work towards that and some other things. Kyle, we haven't heard from Kyle for a while. Kyle, we've got a new feature here. We've got Jeanette Reynolds and Reynolds Wrap. What would you like to add to our conversation here? What's going on, dude?
I love it. It's a kind of just to have the people hear everything you're saying from a different voice and then maybe a slightly different angle. The truckers, for example, are it's a beautiful example of what's going on, and it's not being shown here in California hardly at all because, of course, they don't want to, you know, be proven they're wrong here, the Democrats or the liberals, and there's that. Voltaire classically said common sense just isn't that common anymore, and I think he was, what, late 1700s, early 1800s?
Yeah, French
philosophy. So common sense has always been a little, you know, limited out there, but then I just want to remind everybody that what was the percentage that fought off the British? It was like, I've heard 5%, 18%. Greg, what have you heard? You know,
I think it's about a third. Everything I've heard is like you had a third of the people that were loyalists, a third of the people that were patriots, and a third of the people in the middle were drinking mead. You just got to watch it. Going, what the hell's going on here? Yeah, yeah. Well, let me get you
that. Well, whatever percentage that is, it's a very – I've read it's even smaller than that, and that's 20% of the people do – and it doesn't matter. 20% of the people do 80% of the things. We've heard all of these things. I'm about as optimist as you are, an optimist as the person, and I need these reminders from time to time because you're surrounded by the hand that doesn't do anything, right? There's always going to be the hand that doesn't do anything, and then some even on the other hand that doesn't do much. And so, you know, I had a camping trip in conclusion with 20 guys, and we did it for 30 years in a row, and there were three of us that did almost everything of those 20 guys.
Oh, interesting. Deliverance came to mind. Don't ask me why. Jeanette, you're on the East Coast. Kyle's on the West Coast. What do you hear about California? California is like the aberration these days. It used to be land of freedom and opportunity and beach boys and sunshine and, like, we're going to go have pizza after we surf, man. This is like the place to be. And that's why I moved out there in the 80s. And then it kind of lost its way. It's like the aberration. It's like the state that used to lead the country, but now they're leading it in the leftist direction. Jeanette?
Just to clarify a few things. Number one, yes, you're right. Is it Greg, or rather the gentleman that's on the other line, your name?
That's Kyle, yeah.
Kyle. Thank you, Kyle, for quoting Voltaire. So yeah, common sense is never, you know, a common thing. We get that part. And yes, 20% of the people do 80% of the work. It's always been kind of the rule. But as you said, it is inspiring. That 20% is the and again, sparked by even one small conversation that may seem almost, you know, trite. It's like that's how the spark starts. And the loyalists that started this country were a very tiny group that one could project they were probably 20%. They were of the 20%, right? But that's all it takes. And, you know, it's always been that way. I've been in corporate America a long time, and I always noticed the same. Yeah, it's 20% of us, even less than 20% of us that are doing all the work. But with regard to mainstream media in California, you aren't seeing the trucker convoy stuff just in California. We're not seeing it across the whole United States. So it's not like California is separate. They're blocking it from everywhere. With regard to the politics and lifestyle of California, I too was a California resident for a while up in San Francisco. What always attracted people to that culture of California is the mere fact that the culture is so fantastic. You've got the most beautiful coastline in, I would argue, all of the world. It is absolutely stunning. The California coastline that faces the, you know, Pacific Ocean. It's gorgeous. Number two, you've got, like you said, Greg, the Beach Boys, the whole culture of beach and surfboards and hanging out in your board
shorts. It's
fun.
It's
hippies,
blast, that's where I went. Right? Yeah, yeah.
And then like, also, it was more of a free, liberal, and I use that word carefully, lifestyle. And what does that mean? Well, you know, it's like, hey, we'll hurry up and do it tomorrow. I'm going to go take a surfboard down to the beach first and, you know, hang out. It was very innovative also. All the art people went there. All the creatives went there from Detroit, Michigan, which is where I'm from originally. Everyone wanted to go to California. Why? Because it was far more creative. It really still drew the creatives, I think, up until a certain point in time when the culture started to change to a radical left, weird, inhuman sort of, you know, agenda. And it just became like, ooh, this isn't like cool and fun anymore. It still is a gorgeous piece of real estate out there.
But,
and as they say,
yeah,
California isn't a state, it's a frame of mind. You know, California is a frame of mind. It is like a certain way of doing things. But sadly, again, it's almost like there's like this division between, you know, the division never helps. It just doesn't. Coming together does.
Yeah.
So, that's my
back
point of view.
It's like California dreaming about her mamas and the papas.
Yeah, Pianki's back on the line, too. We're getting a little bit of background noise from Kyle's line. That's why I muted it a couple times just to test it. We're getting a little feedback, either listening on a computer or a speaker or something like that, but we're getting a little recycled echo back to your line, Kyle, so if you want to take a look at that. But, yeah, what happened to the mamas and the papas? What happened to the Beach Boys? What happened to the spirit that was California? Kyle, the left, this is the reason I left. It's like when I left California, I felt like I was coming back into the United States. I remember my first impression – driving out of California, and I got to Arizona, and the very next morning I'm in a little diner, you know, having breakfast, and four guys walked in openly carrying 45s. I'm like, oh, this is wonderful. I'm back in America. You know, it was such a big revelation from California where they would have called the SWAT team on these guys. You know, it's just, can you get your California back, or do you have to move up to Redding up north, or, you know, find some place, you know, within California that's still America and not, you know, leftism? Kyle?
Since 1990, I have personally been attacked by at least 7, if not 12, fourth and fifth level feminists. I've lost my job over it. I've never been guilty. No one's ever been proven that I've done anything wrong. I've been almost kicked out of my apartment twice. Nobody wants to take on women. The problem with California is women have taken it over. Not the wrong, the right women are wonderful. But the wrong women and the twinkle of these wrong gay men, these overly sensitive people, have sensitized California, Wonderful women are great. I'll repeat, wonderful women are great, but they're moving out. They're moving out with the men. The men and wonderful women are moving out of the state, and you're stuck here with this fourth and fifth level feminist woman that just doesn't like men. They attack men.
Okay, Jeanette.
Nobody wants to talk about it, but that's your problem.
Well, we can talk about it. Jeanette?
I would have to agree that this whole, like, feminine studies and college-level academia, and there's just been this push for, you know, it's kind of a leftover from the women's movement of the 70s, right? Like, you know, there was this I Am Woman, Hear Me Roar, and the bra-burning days, and the Gloria Steinem, this kind of very strong feminist voice. Again, when the pendulum swings too far to the right or too far to the left, it just, it leaves no room for anyone for a voice. And the over-feminization, I saw that of males, particularly in California, I saw that great abundantly, apparent in San Francisco. Now, one would say, oh, yeah, well, whatever, there's a large homosexual population there. And that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about normal heterosexual males that be, you know, wearing the buns and the skinny jeans and walking around with a soy latte and very concerned about
the metrosexuals, yeah. Yeah,
and very concerned about their calorie intake. It was like, wait a minute, I like a guy that eats a steak and has a baked potato. Like, please don't eat a salad. That's so, like, I mean, if you've got a weight problem, maybe, but, like, please, be a guy, be a man, eat a steak. Like, but, you know, that may be just my personal preference. But, yeah, there's something in the education system in very prevalent in California and sort of liberal states that obviously kind of push that, you know, men shouldn't be so manly and misogynistic. They see men in a – they paint men in a certain corner, if you will. And then, you know, but who wants a weak male? I don't think any female out there wants a weak male unless it's a militant female, which is, I think, what Kyle is speaking to.
Yeah, and I got to hold you up simply because we're out of time. So what I want to do is, Kyle, if you want to come back next week, and we're still getting an echo on your line, and so we have to want to fix that. That's why I had to mute you a couple times. But we want to make sure that can we get that signal through. But, Jeanette, this would be fascinating. I want to know what a fourth and fifth level feminist is because I haven't a clue. And so that would be something interesting for us to talk about. But California – perceptions and where did the real men go? You know, I mean, I moved to Florida, so just as an example. But anyway, the point being that the entrepreneurial spirit, the inventor guy, the strong, you know, masculine man, you know, it just doesn't exist in California, and there's no room for those that are. It's a really strange thing. Anyway, let's pick this up next week. And Kyle, you're welcome to call back. And so we have to go for now, though, because we're literally out of time. So Greg Penglis for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Our legislative website, writeyourlaws.com, writeyourlaws. And I'll be back tomorrow morning. There we go. That's before we know. Back tomorrow morning at 6 o'clock in the morning, Central Time. And we've got Cindy Cagle with the Medical Freedom Report. We've got Jonathan Mosley with the Legal Report. Now I want to get in the Supreme Court. So we're going to talk a lot of Supreme Court stuff tomorrow, and the Black Privilege candidate that's going to be up for nomination and consideration. All right, talk to you tomorrow.